Welcome in, Dean Richard, Sunday morning, WGA. All right, Shwani, $10,000 if you can tell me who this artist is.
Well, it's probably one or both of the Super Bowl halftime participants, J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez, or Shakira.
I love when you're street and you say J-Lo.
I'm street.
Right. I love when you get street like that.
See, I'm not entirely back in 1976.
Yeah, you pretty much are. Yeah, it's Jennifer Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. She'll probably do this, although this is one of her early songs, and she's evolved so far away from it.
So where's my money?
I've been putting it in an account for your college education. I'm going to give you a savings bond. Like, remember how when we were kids, like somebody would give you a savings bond?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
sure.
Gee, thanks.
Waiting, and then they would tell you that it would mature.
Yeah, eventually. I received quite a, now that I think of it, I hadn't really thought about this. I received quite a few savings bonds when I was a kid. I don't believe that I ever saw a penny of them.
Well, they may be worth some money now if you can find them.
I have to launch an investigation. Somebody in my family's been embezzling my savings bonds. I think I know.
I don't even know if they issue them anymore.
I don't know either.
I wonder.
I don't know.
You see so many ads from banks about, you know, interest on savings accounts and, you know, interest, compounded interest, even though that's not much money these days.
I don't understand what that is, but if anyone from the Treasury Department who's not in jail is listening right now and can give us some information about that, that would be fantastic. But anyway, I digress. Yes, all the money from our bets here on the show all go into a savings account for your college education.
All $3.98.
Later on. But I'm looking forward to the big halftime show today. I mean, it's an event. I honestly could care less about the game itself. I'll watch it. I hope it's exciting. I hope somehow I become engaged in you know what's going on the field, on the gridiron. But I'm looking forward to the halftime show with Jennifer Lopez and with Shakira. And I am looking forward to the commercials because even though a lot of them have already been released, this is a new phenomenon the last few years where the advertisers start leaking out their commercials a week or so before the actual Super Bowl, and everyone starts, you know, showing them. You know, it's like, oh, here we have an early look at the Super Bowl commercials. You know, they get more exposure, which is, you know, that's what it's all about. And there have been some funny ones that have come out so far. I still look forward to seeing them during the game. There's still plenty of them that have not been released during the game. So it's, you know, that ritual, that tradition as part of the Super Bowl is still a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that.
You can bet the halftime show. You can bet this on a prop bet. You can bet which song will Jennifer Lopez sing first at halftime.
Right.
Get Right is minus 400 and anything else is a 300 on the money line. You can also bet on Jennifer Lopez wardrobe changes. Over or under 2.5.
There'll be more than.
Yeah, I was going to say the money's not over.
There's going to be at least five wardrobe changes, I would think.
And you can bet the national anthem length as well.
Under who is doing over the 2 national minutes. Anthem this year?
Demi Lovato.
Yep. 2 minutes is the over under.
Shwani, $10,000 if you can tell me one Demi Lovato song.
No, can't do that.
I won my money back. All right.
So I guess we're even.
That didn't take long. Demi Lovato was the one who was on the Grammy Awards, which I know you watched every second of last Sunday. She's the one that put herself into rehab for depression, for alcoholism, for an attempted suicide, and has come out of that spiral and is doing much better. But she wrote this beautiful, very emotional song about what she was dealing with at the time before she went into a rehab, and she was chosen to sing the national anthem today. So that'll be between like 5 and 5:30, right? What the kickoff is 5:30?
It's supposed to kick off at 5:30, you know, probably 5:38.
Right. So always a little bit late, but yeah. The national anthem will be sung between 5 and 5:30. America the Beautiful will be sung between 5 and 5:30, And are you familiar with a singer named Jay Blavin? Jay Blavin, he's a reggaeton artist. Huh. And pretty popular, and he is going to also be performing during the halftime show. He's just released a song that's called Six Rings, that is a Kobe Bryant song about Kobe Bryant. So, you know, everyone's saying, are they going to do some sort of tribute to Kobe Bryant during the Super Bowl today? It looks like that could be the tribute. To Kobe Bryant that will take place during the halftime show with this song that it will be accompanied by video and, you know, very, you know, emotional footage to go along with that. That first Lakers game the other night, yeah. The opening ceremony with all the footage and all the speeches, and it was hard to watch that.
LeBron James
and... But the video that they showed that featured a lot of photos of Kobe and his family, and especially his daughter, it was just painful to watch it. It's just so sad. The whole story is just so sad.
Yeah, I read the other day, I believe they're going to do a moment of silence before the game to honor
for Kobe.
Kobe Bryant, and also Chris Dolman, who was a longtime a Minnesota Viking, just passed away this week with a bout of brain cancer. So I believe they're going to have a moment of silence for both of those individuals.
Okay. So, you know, I'd be surprised if there wasn't, you know, more than one moment or two to honor Kobe Bryant and all the people that died on the plane, Kobe's little girl and the other people who died on the plane. Just the whole thing was just a horrible, horrible thing that happened a week ago today. Right. I was you know, leaving, finished the show last week. I'm walking out of the elevator, and I get an alert on my phone from TMZ, because they were the ones that broke the story, which has become an even bigger story now about them, you know, perhaps prematurely breaking the story before the family had even been notified. But it was like jaw-dropping when you heard the story. And some people say, oh, it's TMZ, I didn't believe it. I believe TMZ when they report things. They have been remarkably accurate with lots and lots of very important stories. So, anyway, that's what's going to happen on the entertainment-wise in the Super Bowl. We'll dig into it a little bit more later on. We're going to talk about some of the new commercials. I'm looking forward to this Bill Murray commercial. I guess they were up in Woodstock this week.
Last week.
Was it last week?
Yeah. They were shooting a spot.
A new commercial shot in Woodstock, very much like the movie Groundhog Day. And that's one of the commercials that has not been released already. So I'm looking forward to seeing that today. Tell you about some of the other new commercials that I've heard about. I'm going to go back and remember some of the fun old commercials. Think about this. Your favorite Super Bowl commercial, classic commercial. Do you have ones that stick in your mind? I have a few. Let me take a break, and we'll talk more about that. All still coming up. 9:22, Dean Richards, Sunday morning. WGN. 9:25, this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning. Nice of you to be here with us on your busy Sunday morning, Super Bowl Sunday. I have had a ball going back and looking back at some of the most famous Super Bowl commercials of all time. I was going to try to play some of them for you, but many of them are, you know, kind of visual that you have to kind of see what's going on to fully appreciate it. But I know that you'll remember lots of them, like Wendy's Where's the Beef commercial. Remember that actually became part of the presidential campaign between Walter Mondale and President Ronald Reagan, I believe at the time. No, I guess he was president at the time. That was 1984, Super Bowl 18. Who remembers the Joe Namath and Farrah Fawcett Noxzema commercial? That was one of the early Super Bowls, Super Bowl 7, January of 1973, where Joe Namath is just pretty much lathered up and is shaving. And Farrah Fawcett is you know, just kind of fawning over him. Maybe one of the most famous of all time, and what may have kicked off our fascination with Super Bowl commercials in the first place, was the Apple 1984 commercial that seemed so futuristic at the time. January 1984. It was Super Bowl 18. It was the introduction of the Macintosh computer that a lot of people had no idea what that was. My personal favorite Super Bowl commercial of all time. I mean, there have been some really, really great ones. But one that still touches my heart after all of these years was first introduced in 1979, featured a young man and NFL player Mean Joe Green. Listen to this.
Mr. Green? Mr. Green?
Yeah.
You need any help?
Mm-mm.
I just want you to know, I think you're the best ever.
Yeah, sure.
Want my Coke? It's okay, you can have it.
No.
Really, you can have it.
Okay.
A Coke Thanks. And a smile makes me feel good. Makes me feel nice.
Be around.
That's the way it should be.
Thank you.
The whole world smiling with me. Coca-Cola has life. Have a Coke and
thanks, Mean Joe.
Smile.
Aw.
Love that one.
1979. It still brings it, like it touches my heart still.
It puts a lump in your throat and a tear in your eye.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching a Super Bowl commercial show the other day with Boomer Esiason. They talked about the fact that those two are still in touch. The kid was 9.
Yeah.
When they made the commercial, they talk all the time, and me and Joe was welling up with tears.
Yeah, there was there's a video that's easily Googleable of these two guys, Mean Joe Green, and let me see if I can find the guy's name. His name was Tommy Okun. They got together and sat down and talked about their relationship through the years. It's one of the sweetest, most memorable commercials of all time.
Any idea how they found the boy? Did they audition kids for the spot?
I imagine that's probably, you know, how the whole thing works. I've never really heard if there's any kind of remarkable story, but you want to talk about, you know, fantastic commercials. Now, whether or not it made anybody go buy a Coke, I always wonder about that, these commercials that are so clever and so funny and so thoughtful. And does it make you want to go buy a beer? Does it make you want to go, you know, purchase, you know, whatever the product happens to be? I don't know, because, you know, that is the ultimate goal after a while. Anyway, we'll go with some more of the famous commercials in just a little while. Shawnee, you got a far-flung forecast?
I sure do.
Let's get to that in a minute as well. It's all here on Sunday morning, WGN. Okay, I'm pretty sure that I am grilling for the Super Bowl today. It's going to be so nice out this afternoon. I'm looking forward to that. The forecast, cloudy, dry, and breezy. The expected high temperature today, 52 degrees, cloudy, 32 tonight. And then cloudy, 40 degrees for tomorrow. It is a beautiful 43 degrees outside right now. And time for America's most popular feature, the one that people crave, the one that people in Iowa are voting for over and over and over
so
again.
That's what the caucus is really about.
That is what this caucus is really about. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Schwann's far-flung forecast.
And where else can we go on this Groundhog Day but to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania?
Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Punxsutawney is about 85 miles northeast of Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and was first settled in 1772.
You say that like I haven't vacationed there several times.
I thought that was a destination for you.
Oh, I have a place there.
that's your getaway place.
I have a Punxsutawney getaway.
but the Native American people had lived in that area for many, many years prior to the late 1700s when it was first settled by non-indigenous people, as they say. Mm. Punxsutawney actually means the town of the sand flies.
Excuse me?
Or town of the mosquitoes.
Town of the mosquitoes.
Punxsutawney. But of course,
why would you name your town that?
That took it from the name that people gave it. You know, you know what Chicago means, don't you?
Stinky onions.
Yes,
or something like
that's
that.
That's right. It's the place of the wild onion.
I don't understand that. You're naming your town. Don't you want to make it sound attractive?
Attractive.
To, so people will come and, hey, let's go to Stinking Onion. Honey, where should we go on vacation this year?
Let's go to Stinking Onion.
I am dying to go to the mosquitoes are going to bite me.
The town of the sandflies, Punxsutawney. But of course, we know Punxsutawney as the home of Groundhog Day. And here is why. On February 2nd, 1887, a rodent meteorologist was celebrated for the first time in Punxsutawney at an area in the town called Gobbler's Knob. Gobbler's Knob.
Excuse me?
Yes. Gobbler's Knob.
Gobbler's Knob.
Gobbler's Knob in Punxsutawney.
Get that, Andy?
Gobbler's Knob.
Gobbler's Knob. Gobbler's Knob.
The event has its roots in the ancient
Christian.
I can't
even believe you would say the words Gobbler's Knob to me.
Gobbler's Knob. That's what it says here.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to apologize. Some of you may be offended by Schwani's spicy language
Don't you want to know where this all comes from, though?
I do.
Okay. Groundhog has its roots in a Christian tradition of Candlemas. When
Candle what?
Candlemas, or a candle mass.
Oh, candle
mass. Candle mass. Okay. Clergy would bless and distribute candles needed for winter, and the candles represented how long and cold the winter would be. Now, in Germany, they expanded on this by selecting an animal in Germany, the hedgehog, as a means of predicting the weather. And then once some German settlers came to America in Pennsylvania, they continued the tradition, but they couldn't find any hedgehogs, so they settled for groundhogs.
It's hard to find a good hedgehog.
Now, do you want to know the scientific name for a groundhog?
Kidding me?
I'm talking about spicy language.
After Gobbler's Knob, I want to...
Marmota monax.
He's trying to make up words sometimes.
Not sure what was in his coffee today.
And in 1887, a newspaper editor belonging to Groundhog Hunters from Punxsutawney, called the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club, declared that Phil was America's only true weather forecasting groundhogs. And thus, that is how this tradition got started.
Wow, that's very interesting.
It's a Groundhog Day from Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. And if you were watching the video this morning, Dean, you saw that it was snowing there. So they have snow. It's 33 in Punxsutawney for Groundhog Day.
Where they yanked that poor little thing.
He did look kind of stunned, didn't he?
Well, they opened the door. You know, they have a little house for him, which has got to be weird in the first place. They have this little house for him, and it's nice, probably...
Nice and warm in there. It looked like there was hay
nice
inside.
Nice and cozy in there. You know, maybe there was... Mrs. Groundhog was in there, too. You know,
they're cooking breakfast.
Right. They're canoodling in there, you know, like spooning. The spooning is groundhogs like to do. And all of a sudden, someone's big hand gets shoved into their little house, and he gets yanked out of bed to... And they, like, held him up. In the sky.
They paraded him around.
It looked a little cruel, to be honest.
And he didn't have his morning coffee either.
Yeah. Poor thing.
Well, they put him back inside. He's probably back asleep now. Or maybe he's still in shock.
I don't think he ever woke up. he woke up for a minute and goes, honey, you wouldn't believe this dream that I just had.
It seems to happen every February 2nd.
Yeah.
So weird.
I was running a bed and breakfast, and all of a sudden, people came in.
Boy, this is really taking off, hasn't it?
Wow. It's funny, but that is the most obscure Bob Newhart reference that I've ever heard in my life.
Thank you.
Punxsutawney Phil did not see his shadow, so that means early spring.
In Punxsutawney.
But
in Woodstock,
Wet Willie or whatever the what's the Woodstock one
Groundhog
called?
Groundhog
Willie did see his shadow.
Wet Willie,
whatever it's called.
So let's split the difference. Maybe three more weeks of winter.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. That's a very interesting history, Shawnee.
Thank you. Thank you. And by the way, you were reading the real weather forecast the bit earlier. If we hit 52 today, we break the record. Because 51 was the record high in 1992, according to the one and only Tom Skilling.
T. Skilling. It's 43 already. Isn't that funny how 43 seems super warm?
Everybody's so happy.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if we had it. I'm telling you, I'm definitely going to be on the grill today.
Andy took a picture of the sunrise from the studio, and he came back in the newsroom with this look of exuberance and joy on his face, going, Schwani, look at this.
It's been months.
And who knows when we might see it again after today.
Exactly. That's why I take
clouds
advantage.
Are back tomorrow.
Aren't we? Right. We're back to like sort of normal tomorrow. All right. When we come back from the break, I'm going to remember another anniversary. If you've been a listener of WGN through the years, you certainly remember Bob Collins, the great Uncle Bobby. And it was this week, believe it or not, 20 years ago, that we lost Bob Collins to a plane crash. I want to play a couple of clips and remember one of the greatest of all time when we come back at 9:41 now, WGN.
You got your dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Stinking to high heaven.
9:43 now, Dean Richard Sunday morning on WGN. And to know Bob Collins would be to understand how any sort of memorial for somebody would include the song Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road. It was one of Bob's favorite songs, as you longtime listeners of WGN will remember. He enjoyed playing silly little songs like this all of the time. One of the greatest radio personalities of all time, never mind. On WGN, never mind in Chicago, truly one of the greatest communicators that radio was ever blessed to have on its airwaves. Bob started off his career in Tampa, Florida, went to Knoxville, Tennessee, wound up at Milwaukee's WOKY and WRIT, but in 1974 joined WGN. And worked in the evening, worked in the afternoon, and in July of 1986, succeeded the legendary Wally Phillips, taking over the morning show here on WGN, a position that he would hold until February the 8th, 2000, when he, a private pilot, he took off on an afternoon adventure, lost control of the plane, and it crashed into a building in Zion, and Bob Collins was gone at the age of 57, which was shocking. Still is shocking. I can't believe that it's 20 years. I mean, a lot of you, as I say, if you're new to WGN, maybe you don't know the legacy of Bob Collins, but he was amazing and hilarious and thoughtful and just a wonderful guy. I mean, it's just a guy that you always wanted to hang out with. An open-minded person who would surprise you with, things that he said and did. And I think that's what made him so compelling and interesting through the years. There are lots of, classic clips of Bob all over the web, very easy to find on our website. There are classic clips of Uncle Bobby, but for me, the quintessential moments were the day before Bob died and the morning that Bob died. The day before he died, he was talking about. He had asked me to stop into his show for a minute to talk about a TV movie that had been on the night before called Mary and Rhoda, that was a reunion between excuse my voice today, Mary Tyler Moore and Valerie Harper as their characters, Mary Richards and Rhoda Morgenstern. Now, 20 years after their friendship in Minneapolis from their respective popular television shows, it's all these years later. And life had, these two old girlfriends had gotten together again. And the show was about the reunion, but the show was also about how you deal with life as it comes along and how life doesn't always turn out the way that you think it's going to turn out. And as I was explaining all of this to Bob, he just had the most curious look on his face, and it sparked some thought in his mind that he wanted to talk about that. It was at the very end of his second to the last show that he wanted to talk about that, how life doesn't turn out the way that you think it's going to turn out. And then the next morning, which wound up being his last show, he did include talking about these things, very, very moving and thought-provoking things for him, of what you learn in life, what he learned in life. So this is how the conversation started when Bob invited me into the studio to talk about this Mary Tyler Moore and Valerie Harper TV special.
Oh, back to you, Bob. We're just talking.
Hello.
Here. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Collins.
How are you, Mr. Richards? Everything good?
Everything is wonderful and delightful. I was driving in my car, listening to Phil Rosenthal trash my girlfriend, Valerie Harper. And at first I was going to go to the Sun-Times to trash him a little bit.
No.
I'm a Southside boy. You don't mess around with my friends. But I saw the movie, too.
Yeah, what'd you think?
You know what? It's not the old show. It's not the old Mary Tyler Moore show. It's not that funny. And it really shouldn't be, because it's 20 years later. It's a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
But in many ways, it's very charming. It's there are some moments. He pointed out a couple of things, were jokes that weren't that funny. One of the things is a dream sequence, so it's supposed to be a little bit ridiculous. But there are some moments in this that are genuinely funny. There's a Mary dinner party, you know, which were famous for being awful, that they kind of poke fun at, that I laughed out loud. There are a couple of points where I laughed out loud, and I thought it was charming.
It's strange how people from a similar background, you know, Dean Richards looks at television and movies and the arts for WGN and has for a long time, and Phil Rosenthal, specifically television, but you like all the rest of us, but you look at things with such different eyes. I haven't seen the show. However, I have to tell you that I like the Mary Tyler Moore show, but I never really cared for Rhoda a whole lot. Never the spinoffs, the Ed Asner, what was that?
Lou Grant.
Lou Grant. Thank you very much. What's happened to him? Is he still always?
He's doing a theater. He does a made-for-TV movie every once in a while.
He's still very politically active.
Very much so. He's one of these socially conscious guys, right?
But I just wonder, when you have a very, very popular show like the Mary Tyler Moore show was, I look at Lucille Ball and Carol Burnett, who also tried to come back with varying degrees of success after long absences. And I just wonder if you, because I remember Mary Richards, I remember Mary Tyler Moore, like I say, from the opening of the show, throwing that blue hat in the air, and that's the way I want to remember her.
A beloved, lovable character.
Absolutely.
And I think, wisely, Mary Tyler Moore and Valerie Harper, they were going to do a series, and they decided not to do it because the quality wasn't there. And they said, we can't do this on a regular basis.
And why would they want to? They're both of an age. Why do they want to work that hard?
They really don't need to, really.
Sure.
As you said, they're not doing this for the money.
Yeah.
But they thought it would be fun to kind of update these two beloved characters. One of the things that a listener pointed out about shaving the legs and maybe this is a chick flick.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it is a little bit of a chick flick, because what you also discover in the story that Phil didn't talk about at all is that this is a story about two women who are approaching 60 years old whose lives didn't really pan out the way that they thought it was going to pan out. And it's how two women of that age kind of are working to struggle and rebuild their lives. Whether it was Mary or Rhoda or not, it's still kind of an interesting story in that sense.
Hold that thought, because I want to break for traffic. Mary's in Traffic Central. We'll do that. Then I want to come back and ask you about that. What's going on, Mary?
So there you go.
So that was, you know, the what set this off. And when we don't have the recording of when we came back from the break, but Bob was obsessed with that idea of life not turning out the way that you thought it was going to turn out. Let me take a quick little break here. When we come back, I want to play for you what Bob did on his final show, and talking about 21 things that he learned as he grew older. It's rather profound. On this day that we remember Bob Collins, it was this week, believe it or not, 20 years ago, that we lost our beloved Uncle Bobby. That's all coming up next, WGN. Coming up after 10 o'clock, we'll talk with meteorologist Mike Hamernick, get the update on today's forecast, the beautiful weather for today, and then what's going to happen for the rest of the week. Plus, theater critic Chris Vire will join us. Things to see, things to take a pass on that are on stage in Chicago later on. Going to go back into some of our A-list interviews of some of the Academy Award nominees, talking about the projects that will bring them to next Sunday, a week from today, Academy Award Sunday. This morning, we are remembering one of radio's greatest of all time, the great Bob Collins, who, you know, fortunately for us here on WGN, was here from 1974 until his death in the year 2000, and brought some of the most hilarious, most thought-provoking, most interesting programming that, ever came out of a radio. We're remembering Uncle Bobby on this week. It's actually February 8th when he passed away, but I wanted to get to that because we're going to be packed with Academy Awards stuff next week. I wanted to just spend a little time. As you just heard a moment ago when I played that clip of Bob the day before he passed away, when he invited me to come on a show to talk about this Mary Tyler Moore and Valerie Harper TV movie. And one of the morals of that show was life doesn't turn out the way that you think it's going to turn out. That's fascinated Bob. And it was at the end of his second to the last show. And he goes, we're not going to have time to talk about it today, but tomorrow I want to talk about this. And he talked a lot about expectations in life and things that didn't turn out the way that you thought they were going to turn out. And then he put together 21 things that he learned as he grew older. This was on Bob Collins' final show.
Some things I have learned as I aged. Age 6. I've learned that I like my teacher because she cries when we sing Silent Night. Age 7, I've learned that you can't hide a piece of broccoli in a glass of milk. Age 9, I've learned that when I wave to people in the country, they stop what they're doing and wave back. Age 13, I've learned that just when I get my room the way I want it, Mom makes me clean it up. Age 14, I've learned that if you want to cheer yourself up, you should try cheering somebody else up. Age 15, I've learned that although it's hard to admit, I secretly am glad my parents are strict with me. Age 24, I've learned that silent company is often more healing than words or advice. Age 26, I've learned that brushing my child's hair is one of life's great pleasures. Age 29, I've learned that wherever I go, the world's worst drivers follow me there. Age 39, I've learned that if somebody says something unkind about me, I must live so that no one will believe it. Age 41, I've learned that there are people who love you dearly but just don't know how to say it. Age 44, I've learned that you can make somebody's day simply by sending them a little card. Age 46, I've learned that the greater a person's sense of guilt, the greater his need to cast blame on others. Age 47, I've learned that children and grandparents are natural allies. Age 49, I've learned that singing Amazing Grace can lift my spirit for hours. Age 50, I've learned that the motel mattresses are better on the side away from the phone. Age 51, I've learned that you can tell a lot about a man by the way he handles these three things: a rainy day, lost luggage, and tangled Christmas tree lights. Age 52, I've learned that keeping a vegetable garden is worth a whole medicine cabinet full of pills. Age 53, I've learned that regardless of your relationship with your parents, you miss them terribly after they die. Age 58, I've learned that making a living is not the same thing as making a life. Age 61, I've learned that if you want to do something positive for your children, try improving your marriage. Age 62, I've learned that life sometimes gives you a second chance. Age 64, I've learned that if you pursue happiness, it will elude you. But if you focus on your family, the needs of others, your work, and meeting new people, and doing the very best you can, happiness will in fact find you. Age 66, I've learned that whenever I decide something with kindness, I almost always make the right decision. Age 72, I've learned that everybody can use a prayer. Age 73, I've learned to believe in miracles, and to tell you the truth, I've seen a few. Age 82, I've learned that even if I have pains, I don't have to be one. Age 85, I've learned that every day you should reach out and touch someone. People love the human touch. Holding hands, a warm hug, or a friendly pat on the back, it's all wonderful. And age 92, I've learned that I still have a lot to learn.
There's Bob Collins on his final broadcast. It was February 8th, the year 2000. He finished up his show. He went up in a private plane and crashed into the building in Zion, Illinois. And at age 57, we lost one of the greats of all time. And we remember him still today here on WGN, personally, professionally. One of the best guys that there was. From our text line, the 815 area code, thanks, Dean. So good to hear Uncle Bobby and reminisce. Here is the 847 area code. Would love to hear the program where he got so angry at the caller that he hung up on him. I think that happened more than once. Bob was honest, no matter what they were talking about. The time that he talked about the snake in his garage, hearing him talk or people talking about him still brings tears to my eyes. He seemed like such a good person. And he definitely was that. 773 area code. Bob Collins was the best. Thank goodness WGN still has you and a number of other gems. Well, that's nice of you to even put to me or anybody else here in the same sentence. WGN has been blessed to have some amazing personalities. And I'm glad we could remember our friend, as I say, one of the greatest of all time.
It'll always be great to hear that voice.
The great Bob Collins. Isn't it something just to hear and the way he paused and phrased the sentence was nothing
short. It forced your undivided attention.
Yeah, nothing short of genius. And let's get a little news. Happy Super Bowl Sunday. Nice to have you all here with us today. Earlier in the show, we were talking about U.S. savings bonds. You know, when you got a gift from somebody, it was a big deal. It was fancy. It's like you're getting a, you know, some kind of federal document or something, you know, because they were so impressive looking, weren't they?
Well, actually, you were getting a federal document.
Well, I mean, it was, but I mean, it was, for some reason, to get a $25 savings bond seemed much cooler than just getting $25.
It really was.
When really the $25 probably was worth more than cashing in a savings bond at the time. But we were asking, I haven't seen a savings bond in years. And we were wondering, can you still get savings bonds? And we've got quite a few people texting in that you definitely can still get savings bonds. And you get them electronically now.
You know, of course.
That's, you know, because
that stands to reason with everything else.
Yeah, savings bonds as gifts. There's a website you can get them electronically. You can get a paper gift bond. I guess this would be like the similar one. But when I go to the Treasury's website, because I like to spend as much time as possible as I can on the U.S. Treasury's website. Anytime I think I have anything in life figured out, I go on there and it like scrambles my brain. It's like turning an Etch-a-Sketch upside down and shaking it. That's what it's like to go on this website. But here's what, if you want to get a paper U.S. savings bond, it says here when you file your IRS tax return, you can buy a paper Series 1 savings bond for yourself or others if you are owed a refund. So I guess you get a savings bond instead of a check. Is that how it works? I guess that's so.
Guess so.
I guess that's how it works.
So now I know what to get you for your birthday.
Oh, thanks.
A savings bond.
Yeah, that'd be nice. That'd be nice.
25 cents.
They have, wow, that's 25.
50 cents.
25 cents more than I got last year. So, so that's nice. There's a section on here. You learn so much when you this internet. I think it's going to catch on. There's all kinds of things you can go on here and learn about the history of coins and currency. There's a whole section here on the U.S. Mint, and you go to the coin section, and it tells you about collecting coins, and you learn quite a bit about coins and cash. I have a whole bottle of my grandmother when she was she had colon cancer, died in 1970, and I was about to start college, so she had this. It's like a it was a bank. It was a giant brandy bottle with a that was designed to be a bank. It had a little slot in it, and she would put into this bank silver dollars. And when, you know, when she knew that she was passing away, she gave me this bottle and said, I want you to use this to go to college. I still have it. I never used it.
How far back do some of those go?
I did open it up and look at what was in there. I haven't spent anything or cashed anything
yet. No, but you have some money in there with some of those older silver dollars.
There are silver dollars in there from the 1800s.
Oh, whoa.
From the 1800s. There are coins that, you know, nickels and quarters and things like that, that I've never seen coins like this before. So, I mean, part of me wants to keep this as a, you know, family heirloom and pass it on in my family.
Yeah, I think you should. Really.
Part of me, you know, wants to cash it in and go to Vegas. but I don't even know how. Now that I found this site, it tells you, you know, how to find, like, what are here. There's a section in here about the basics of coin collecting. So, you know, now I'm going to learn a little bit about this because I thought, you know, if I go to one of these coin collecting places, how do you know if they're
giving you the real deal?
Yeah. How do you know if you're, you know, there's so many coins here. How do you know, unless you sit there for 10 hours with the guy, how do you, I mean, you don't even know, even if you did sit there for 10 hours with the guy, I have no idea what's what and with all that. So I'm going to try to learn a little something here. Maybe I will give you $10,000, Schwann.
Maybe you will. Maybe now, this is a whole new segment for the show.
Yeah.
Coin Time.
There are no other radio shows that do segments on coin collecting. This could be another WGN first.
That's right.
You know, possibly to...
Seriously, does it talk... There are certain years that coins are especially valuable. Does it talk about what years, perhaps, to look for on a penny or a quarter?
Well, let me see here. The general condition of the coin, you know, whether it's beaten up or, you know, whether it's in good shape, I guess the ridge of the coin, you know, the edge of the coin, that's a big deal. It says here the relief of the coin, you know, whoever's picture is on the coin.
Yeah.
If it's fairly dimensional as opposed to being flat, then, you know, I guess it's good. There are all kinds of things on here that I couldn't possibly go over. But, yeah, I guess it says here, get started coin collecting. It tells you, you know, it gives you some of the basics. So I'm going to learn some of this.
When I was a kid, around third or fourth grade, they started talking about the sandwich coins. In other words, you know, coins weren't all made entirely of silver in order to save the money on them, you know, so
they were made out of sandwiches.
No, they were the sandwich coins, meaning silver on the front and back.
Hey, I got a baloney 25.
You mean I never get to finish my story.
I could go to the store and buy something with baloney and cheese.
I never get to explain what I mean by this. Look at a quarter. You have a quarter in your pocket?
I don't think so.
I do. All right. The interior, the middle section of a quarter is copper.
Okay.
And then the front, the top and bottom are silver.
Oh, you mean like it's sandwiched in that way?
Yes. So that's
copper,
what I mean.
The copper is the bologna.
That's right. The copper is the bologna, the salami.
I think you're full of bologna myself.
I'm never going to speak again on this show. Never. Never.
So what's the deal with that then? If the copper is the bologna, what does that mean?
But it's still a quarter is a quarter. It's still 25 cents, but they were saving the amount of silver that was used to make these coins.
Right. So probably some of these old coins that I have are all silver, right?
That's right. And that is why they are worth probably more than your typical average coin.
Worth 27 cents instead of 25.
Do you have any half dollars
with
JFK on them?
I have lots.
I have a couple.
There are lots of JFK. My grandmother gave this to me. Loved John Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And there are tons of John Kennedy half dollars that are in there. Some mm-hmm. Some of these old silver dollars are, you know, like the really, really old ones are beautiful artistically. They're so intricate in their, you know, design and, you know, I may be sitting on a gold mine.
I think you may have some hidden cash there. Yeah.
I may be moving to Beverly
Hills, that is.
White gold. Thanks, Steve.
White gold.
Eating at the fancy eating table.
Well, the first thing you know, Uncle Dean's a millionaire.
It's been sitting with this bottle all these years.
His friends all said, Dean, move away from there.
Well, my friends do say that.
Yes, they do.
My friends do say, my friends do ask me to please not contact them anymore. That's very possible.
Don't want to hear from you now.
Yeah, that's very true.
And when they say Beverly, they don't mean the area on the south side of Chicago.
Well, oddly, that's where I lived at the time.
I know.
Yeah. Let me take a break. We're going to talk to meteorologist Mike Hamernick in a couple of minutes. Wanted to remind you, we've got another of our Dean's Night Out coming up at the Paramount Theater. This is where we go out and we check out their new shows. And we bring along a whole load of listeners along with to not only see the show, give you a pair of tickets to see the show, but we also have a really nice pre-show little reception with hors d'oeuvres and drinks, and we just get to talk and take pictures and, you know, things like that. It's really a lot of fun. These Dean's Night Out have been so much fun. And our next one will be on Sunday, February 23rd. It's their new show, The Secret of My Success, world premiere of this hilarious new heartfelt musical that is based on the 1987 Universal Pictures film starring Michael J. Fox. If you would like to join me for this, please, I'm pretty sure my voice will be cleared up by then. 10 winners will get a pair of tickets to join me at the Paramount and to enjoy the private reception that we have before the show. Very easy to enter. You just go to WGNradio.com/contest. Give the information that they require, and then we'll pick names at random. It's going to be Sunday, February 23rd, The Secret of My Success, the next show at the Paramount in Aurora. Enter to win your tickets now at WGNradio.com/contest. Wow, who knew so many of you were interested in coin collecting? On our text line, everyone is asking about the website that I was looking at for the U.S. Mint that gave information about coin collecting and savings bonds and all that. People are asking me to repeat the website address, so let me give you that one more time. It's very easy to remember. USMint.gov. USMint.gov is the site that I was looking at, and we can all learn together. Somebody else texted in, can a stamp collecting segment on the show be far beyond? That's an excellent idea, by the way. I'm all up for you doing things that have never been done on the radio before. Salted caramels, chocolate-covered strawberries, pink champagne truffles. Time to start dropping hints about what you really want for Valentine's Day. Chocolate from Anderson's Candy Shop. Buttery, crunchy, English. Sorry about that. Buttery, crunchy, English toffee. And those crazy good peanut butter creams. Time to indulge. Plus, this year you can pair your sweetheart's favorites with something new, a mini golf date in Richmond. Visit Anderson's Candy Shop, February 15th and 16th, and treat yourself to a putt around Richmond. The shops downtown will host a 9-hole course each day that you can play for just $3. Time to leave AndersonsCandyShop.com. Open on your browser, though. And time to share Anderson's most recent candy-making Facebook pic. Never underestimate the power of a gentle whisper into the sleeping ear, Anderson's, for Valentine's Day. For the traditionalist, Anderson has more than 20 kinds of heart-shaped boxes. And for the industrious, try the chocolate-covered ginger. AndersonsCandyShop.com for shipping or a location near you. For Valentine's Day, nothing beats these handmade, family-owned Anderson's treats. All I know is that they are crazy delicious. I don't think I've ever had any better chocolates than I have, or, you know, candies as I have from Anderson's chocolates. I mean, the ones that they talk about here, the caramels and the chocolate-covered strawberries, all classics, all good, the peanut butter creams, all that. The crunchy English toffee is awesome. And I got to get a little taste of this chocolate-covered ginger. That sounds good. AndersonsCandyShop.com for Valentine's Day. Hello there, my friend Mike Hamernick. How are you?
Hey, Dean. Happy Groundhog Day.
Happy Groundhog Day to you. So how do weathermen generally feel about these groundhogs, you know, getting into their territories, trying to take over their jobs, predicting the weather? You know, I would think that you guys would be very resentful of these rodents trying to do your job without any science involved whatsoever.
Well, you know, I'm not too, I don't feel too threatened by a little groundhog having it one day a year to forecast the weather. You know, it's not much science to us at all. It's just kind of fun. And they're kind of cute, you know. You got to give them that. So, yeah, I don't feel threatened at all by the groundhog. I embrace it.
Probably makes you feel good, too, that this Punxsutawney Phil in Pennsylvania is predicting an early spring. And the one up in Woodstock, Illinois, did see its shadow.
Right.
You know, which means six more weeks of winter, which we're probably going to have six more weeks of winter anyway, right?
Yeah, we usually do. It's pretty rare in February and in March not to have another stretch of winter. Jimmy the Groundhog, too. There's another groundhog that's sort of nearby.
One. Jimmy?
Jimmy the Groundhog in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, which is just outside of Madison. He also saw a shadow. So we've got two,
the two local rodents both saw their shadow.
Yeah. But on a more scientific note, you know, we're getting the long, we look at the data, the science, the longer range data we get in, and it's looking like the second half of February could be above normal temperatures. I'm not going to say it's going to be spring-like, but it looks like, you know, above normal temperatures for the last 2 weeks of February after a little bit of a downturn this week. So not really seeing signs of anything real harsh as far as winter is concerned that's going to stick around for very long. So kind of a continuation of what we've had so far this winter. Every month has been above normal temperature-wise, and right now, as long as those last 2 weeks of February shape up as above normal, which they do right now, you know, it'll be another fairly mild month coming up.
You know, even if it stays pretty much the way that it's been this winter, this has been a, you know, crazy, remarkably mild winter, you know, except for the Halloween snowstorm and the little bit of snow that we've had here and there. It hasn't been that cold. It hasn't been that snowy.
Started out with gangbusters, you know, like gangbusters with that snow and the cold to start the winter. But, yeah, since then, it hasn't been bad. I don't think we've had a below zero temperature yet this year, which is pretty unusual. So, and I don't really see anything close as far as sub-zero temps anytime soon. The Arctic air is locked up. Not only, you know, north of Canada, but, you know, the Northwest Territories, the Arctic Circle, and we'll dip a little bit further south over the next week or so, but again, doesn't look like it's coming down in full force anytime soon. So the science is disagreeing with the groundhog, at least for us here in Chicago. Again, it may not be spring-like, but it certainly doesn't look like an all-out winter-type pattern for the next 6 weeks.
All right, so
certainly not winter-like today.
I want to know. I want to ask you about something because I'm here in our beautiful Skyline studio, and I'm looking out the window, and there's something that I'm seeing I don't think I've ever seen before. There's an extremely bright object that is up in the sky. It's scaring me, Mike. It's,
yeah, we're working on that.
I don't know what it is.
We've got several teams out right now trying to discern exactly what's going on out there with that. 12 days since we've seen much in the way of sunshine here in Chicago. What a stretch for us. And fortunately, it's over. We've got this mild Pacific air that scoured out those low clouds, which just hung out day after day after day. And the wind, it's kind of windy out there. That's the one negative today. But the wind is our friend. It's the wind that pushed the clouds out and is also bringing the milder temperatures in. So we're going to have to put up the wind, which will gust around 40 miles per hour at times. But temperatures, they're going through the roof for this time of the year. You know, the record for today is 51, shooting for a high of 52. And many spots look like they'll be even warmer than that. Right now, it's already 46 at O'Hare. Milwaukee has already tied the record. They're at 49 right now. So they've, at 10 o'clock in the morning, have already established a tie for the record, and they certainly look like they're going to break it. Some of the south suburbs could be flirting with 60 this afternoon if we the sunshine sticks around long enough through about 2 or 3 o'clock. So this is an unusual and banner day. So not only are we seeing the return to sunshine, but temperature-wise for about 3 or 4 hours there between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m., it's going to feel pretty good. We haven't been above 40 degrees since January 10th. And we're already there, so it's been a while since we've seen temps like this.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It feels like summertime outside right now.
And they could have played the Super Bowl in Kansas City. Kansas City, the high there today, 65.
Wow.
Miami's high, 69.
Really?
So, yeah. Even Denver. Denver's going to be warmer than Miami today, it looks like. They'll make it up to around 70 today.
Wow.
So, there's a nice push of mild Pacific air. Unfortunately, it's not going to stick around, Dean, but this is a nice little break from winter across much of the central
U.S.
It
definitely is. I'm sure a lot of those high rollers would have much rather been in Kansas City than well, in Miami for their week-long parties that go on.
The nights are definitely hotter in Miami.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, whether in the Miami area, I just presume this time of the year is going to be very pleasant.
Yeah, there rained yesterday. Some pretty big storms roaming around, but all that rain is gone. A little cool front slipped through, and that's why the dip in temperature there. They've been up around 80 just about every day, but cooler today. They'll be around 70 for high, but low humidity, players will like that. Still very pleasant as far as Super Bowl weather is concerned, but weather is not going to be a factor for the game down in Miami today.
All right, as we look ahead at the work week that's coming up, what are we looking at? I mean, it's not going to be like today, that I know.
No, yeah, this is going to be it as far as a really warm air. Winds turn off the lake tomorrow with clouds beginning to build back in once again, but I think the precip will stay away for tomorrow. We're looking for high around 40. And there's two systems, one on Tuesday and one for later Thursday night and Friday. Both are dicey. They're certainly not a sure thing. The Tuesday system looks like it's going to be moisture starved, so we're not expecting much in the way of precip out of that. It looks like a rain-snow mix. I don't think it's going to cause too many problems. There's a Thursday system looks a little more interesting. One of our models or a couple of our models bring the snow in here. A couple of them take it south, so the jury's still out on that Thursday system. But if that does move further north or clip Chicago, we could get several inches of snow out of that on Thursday. But again, that is definitely not a sure thing. So nothing major as far as storms, it looks like, at this point for us. But a definite downturn in temperatures, more winter-like for the rest of the week. 30s to maybe a couple days in the 20s. Wednesday looks like the coldest day with a high around 27.
That's doable.
I think
we can do that.
We're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. We've got, spring training in Arizona opening up in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Opening day less than a month less than 2 months away. And St. Patrick's Day, what is that, about 6 weeks away or 5 weeks away?
That's always one of the coldest days of the year, having been in those parades forever. It's always brutally cold on St. Patrick's Day.
But if you're a little winter weary, you've got some spring benchmarks coming up on the calendar and light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of St. Patrick's Day, I just learned that our WGN-TV float this year, first time, we're going to be on the Southside Parade. This year. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't think we've ever done that. One other area that I want to ask you about, and
sure.
It's kind of a big area, so I don't know how you break this down exactly, but the Iowa caucuses are tomorrow. Generally, can we say anything about the state of Iowa? Because, the weather can have a big effect on turnout and whether or not people actually go out for the caucuses.
Is that tomorrow or Tuesday?
I think it's tomorrow. I think so.
Okay, because I'm thinking,
double check.
I think you're right. It's not going to be anything unusual. Looks like it's going to be pretty dry in Iowa. Not much in the way of precip. That storm for us on Tuesday might bring a little bit of precip their way, but there's nothing major weather-wise, nothing Iowans won't trudge through the weather for. It looks like 30s and 20s for high temperatures, and it could be later in the day a little bit of light rain or snow in the southern portion of the state, but nothing major that's going to, I think, slow people down.
Yeah, I think the people who live there, you know, are, you know, like us. You know, we're just used to it's winter, and we're kind of used to it, but nothing, you know, no major storms, no major anything like that.
I lived in Iowa for 2 years in Cedar Rapids, and yeah, they're pretty hardy. They're not going to let a little weather stop them.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to say that I have been enjoying, you know, watching the national newscast and seeing the pampered news anchors doing live reporting from Iowa, you know, dressed like they're going to Alaska.
Right.
Because they're not used to the super cold weather whatsoever, standing out in the, you know, the great Midwest. All right. Well, it sounds like we're in good shape with everything. Mike, I hope you have a wonderful Super Bowl Sunday today.
All right, Dean, I appreciate it. Happy Groundhog Day, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, there's meteorologist Mike Hamernick with the latest. When we come back, we're going to get into our Week in Theater segment. Theater critic Chris Vyer joins us in a couple of minutes on WGN. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning at WGN. Nice to have you here with us. Coming up in our next hour, we're going to continue sharing some of the interviews that we did over the past month or so with Academy Award nominated and Academy Award winning actors and directors. We're going back to bring it all to you, because next week is the Academy Awards Sunday, February 9th. And we're really going to dig into the Academy Awards. We're going to dig into nominations and predictions and, you know, all that sort of thing. So I wanted to get some of the interviews in for you this week. So that will be coming up after 11 o'clock today. And for our Super Bowl Food Time show today, this has become a tradition through the years here on the program. We did appetizers the last week, the kinds of things that you would put out on your Super Bowl table today, which, you know, if we talked about them today in our 12 o'clock hour when the food show is on, it'd be a little bit late for you to, you know, take up any of those ideas. So on Super Bowl Sunday, we always talk soup. And great soup recipes, super soup recipes, if you will. So we've got some delicious choices. We've got some healthy choices, which are not necessarily mutually exclusive. That will be coming up for you after 12 o'clock today here on WGN. And also, by the way, this coming Tuesday is the Mardi Gras begins. Fat Tuesday takes place. And our pal Jimmy Banos is going to be joining us on the program today. He's got some new things. His Heaven on 7 restaurant is celebrating a major anniversary. We'll talk about that with Jimmy. We'll talk about his Fat Tuesday celebrations. He's got kind of a pop-up project going on for Heaven on 7. It's actually a po' boy pop-up with, you know, those great New Orleans-style po' boy sandwiches. So all of that and more is still coming up on the program today. Let's get into our Week in Theater segment, talk about some of the things that are great on stage in the Chicago area, some of the things that you may want to think about taking a pass on. Joining me to talk about it is theater critic Chris Vyer, who you can read. I'm reading you lately in the Sun-Times. You're popping up. That's kind of nice for you. Congratulations.
Hey, thanks, Dean.
And storefrontrebellion.com is where you can also read a lot of Chris's work. It's a kind of a slow time of year, isn't it, for theater? I don't know. It seems like...
Yeah, it has been. It's kind of... You know, every year you hit the holidays and there's a little bit of a lull coming out in January, but we are heading into a very busy time of year. February is a pretty crazy time of year for the amount of theater openings that are coming up, and of course Chicago Theater Week is coming up as well.
Yeah, we'll talk about all those things that are coming up. Talk a little bit about Theater Week. It's interesting because February can, you know, traditionally be one of the most brutal weather months of the year in Chicago. And you think that people wouldn't want to go out to go to the theater. You know, just they'd kind of hunkered in, you know, cabin fever. But, you know, I guess if the theaters, if you put something out there, I guess the theaters feel like people will come.
I mean, I guess it's you could also look at it as a reason to get out of the house. I was looking at my I have my time hop on my phone, and was looking at just a little over a year ago we had the polar vortex
right
hit, yeah. And I was trapped in my apartment for 3 days straight, and
you were ready to go see anything,
looking for an excuse to get out and right. do anything. Yeah,
right. You would have gone seeing Cats the Musical at that point. Anything to get out of the house.
I would have gone for a return visit to Cats the Movie. Yeah,
yeah. That's what I meant. That's what I meant. Did you see that, by the way?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm curious because I'm sure, like me, you probably have seen more than your share of Cats the Musical on stage.
Sure.
And then this Cats the Musical movie comes out, which I was still picking up my jaw like 3 days later after the movie came out. What was your take on all of that?
I saw it on I went to a Friday matinee with a couple of friends, and we definitely had some drinks beforehand.
Maybe that was my problem. Drinks. Yeah,
I was. I'm still confused about what I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand whose idea it was to turn a show that slight, and that, the dependent on its theatricality into a CGI fest like that. Yeah. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, one of the many problems. Were you a fan of Cats the Musical on stage?
It's never
prior
been
to that.
It's never been my favorite. No, yeah. No. I like some Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals. I'm a big fan of Jesus Christ Superstar. I enjoy Phantom of the Opera in certain ways. But yeah, no, Cats has never been something that was a big draw for me.
Yeah, same for me. When new productions of Cats open in Chicago, I keep thinking, well, this will be the time that I finally it's eluded me this whole time.
No.
Maybe this will be the time that I finally appreciate what everyone's been talking about. And I don't have that many years left in my life. So I don't know how many more versions of this I can go see.
Right.
Especially after seeing this movie. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that we kind of agree on that. I have not seen the new production at the Goodman Theater that's called Roe, R-O-E.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about what this is about and how you think they executed there.
Sure. So Roe opened at the Goodman just this past Monday. It's as you might expect, it's a play about the Roe v. Wade case at the Supreme Court that resulted in the legalization nationwide of abortion. It's a play by Lisa Loomer. It's played around the country, several regional theaters. It was commissioned by Oregon Shakespeare Festival. It's played at Berkeley Rep, Arena Stage in Washington, D.C., and now it's at the Goodman. It sort of plays with the idea of documentary-style theater in that it tries to it follows the people behind the original case of Roe v. Wade, Norman McCorvey, who was the anonymous plaintiff in that case, and Sarah Weddington, who was the lawyer who argued it in front of the Supreme Court. But it recognizes that truth is elusive. It follows both of those women in sort of parallel and acknowledges that both of them had sort of differing narratives of how the case got started. Norma McCorvey famously sort of recanted, disowned her part in that case and became, in her later life, an anti-abortion activist. So it's, it it's a very even-handed look at how that case went down, almost to a fault, I would say, even-handed.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. If it, you know, when you say that's, you know, documentary style, mm-hmm. are they presenting facts as they took place, or do they take a position pro or anti-abortion in the perspective of laying out the plot line?
I think the playwright is very careful not to take a position, but it's also not hard to see what the playwright's probable position is. I think it's easy to say that Lisa Loomer, you know, wants the decision in Roe v. Wade to remain where it is, and the play also acknowledges that it's somewhat in danger in this current environment. The play takes pains to acknowledge that there are, you know, differing points of view. You know, both Norma McCorvey and Sarah Weddington wrote books in the wake of the case that have that contradict each other in the facts, and the play sort of plays with that idea by having several of the characters sort of, you know, break the fourth wall and say, you know, directly to the audience, this, you know, these are the competing ideas, and, you know, we right. can't really know the truth.
Right.
And it brings that around to the very idea of, you know, the basis of the case. When does life begin? Well, you know, no, there are different truths. You can't really know one way or the other.
Yeah, those are the controversial aspects of it all.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds more than thought provoking, so you are recommending seeing it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Let me take Row at the Goodman Theater right now. We'll get to some more of Chris's recommendations, a couple of things that he didn't like, and more importantly, things that are going to be opening soon in the Chicago area. All that coming up as we continue the Week in Theater, WGN. It is 10:49. This is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Don't forget, tomorrow morning we'll be recapping everything Super Bowl. I'll be talking about the Super Bowl halftime shows and the commercials and all the entertainment aspects of what's going to go on today in Miami. We'll have the full recap on all of that for you tomorrow, in addition to all of the new sports, weather, and traffic. We've got reporters that are covering the Iowa caucuses. It's going to be a very, very busy week, and we've got it all for you tomorrow morning. WGN Morning News starts at 4 a.m., goes until 10 on my favorite TV station, WGN-TV. And Chris Vyer is here, theater critic and StorefrontRebellion.com. Explain what StorefrontRebellion.com is.
Sure. It's
a great site. I enjoy reading it and your opinions and just thoughts and your musings and things that on there. Yeah.
Storefront Rebellion is a it's an email newsletter service that I started a little over a year ago, for theater reviews and news and thoughts. You know, I write these days for the Sun Times, as you mentioned, and for Chicago Magazine, but I just found that I was seeing more shows than I had places to express my thoughts about, and so I launched this email newsletter and website where I could express some of those thoughts a little more freely. You know, it's a place to come for just kind of roundups of my recommendations.
Yeah.
and you know, news and thoughts on theater in the city.
Yeah, if you're a theater fan, you need to subscribe and check it out. And also follow Chris on Twitter at Chris Vyer, K-R-I-S-V-I-R-E, on Twitter. And there's all kinds of interesting thoughts and comments that he has on there all the time. It's a very entertaining to see your posts on there. Hmm. All right, so another show that you are recommending is called Verboten, which is at the House Theater. I've always enjoyed what they've done at House Theater, always interesting and thought-provoking. Tell us about this.
Yeah, Verboten it's a punk rock musical. It's got a book by Brett Nevue, who's a prolific local playwright, and it's about it's a true-ish story of a tween punk rock band from Evanston in the early '80s. These were kids who were like, you know, 11 to 14 in 1983, and formed a punk rock band called Verboten. One of the members of that band was a guy named Jason Narduzzi, who's still a working musician. He tours with Bob Mould and Superchunk, and leads his own band called Split Single, and he's written the music for this show, which is all about sort of the complicated home lives of these kids when they were, you know, teens, preteens, working toward playing a gig at the Cubby Bear. when the Cubby Bear was kind of a hub in the early to mid '80s of, you know, Chicago's punk rock scene.
Yeah, it was a very alternative club. Yeah.
Hosting all ages shows, and you know, that area of Lakeview had, you know, the Alley and, you know, the Punkin' Donuts.
Punkin' Donuts.
Which is, you know, now
it's a Target
been,
now. Isn't
now
it?
Has been torn down. It's a Target, yeah. but it's just kind of a great snapshot of this moment in the '80s when Chicago had this sort of nascent young punk rock scene, and it's got a great score of songs that actually sound like punk rock. You know, I think my problem with a lot of quote unquote rock musicals is that the music sounds like, you know, a musical theater composer's idea of what rock music is. And these, you know, this is a score written by an actual working rock musician who brings some real authenticity to it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Okay, at the House Theater, Verboten. Yeah,
playing at the Chopin Theater in Wicker Park.
Some people may want to avoid the Super Bowl at all costs today and really looking for something completely alternative. Today is the final day for the musical Once on This Island, for which you were not a fan. A lot of people did not get great reviews since it's been here.
Yeah. You know, I think the music of this show is really lovely in a lot of ways. This is a 1990 musical by Stephen Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens, who were the team who went on to write Ragtime and Seussical the Musical and some other, you know, sort of well-known titles. This was their first Broadway production in 1990. And this current touring production is based on the recent revival played Broadway in 2017. And it's sort of a version of Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid, transferred to a Caribbean setting. But, you know, the Broadway production played the Circle in the Square Theater, which is a pretty intimate, in the round theater. I didn't see this production there, but I've seen other shows there. Fun Home played there. The recent revival of Oklahoma played there. It's a very inviting, very intimate setting. And you know, this touring production necessarily is playing a lot of giant proscenium houses. Like this, here it's at the Cadillac Palace. And it just feels like the creators did not, like, they haven't successfully translated that feeling of
the intimacy.
So that it moves beyond the proscenium and out into, you know, big 2,000 seat houses.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because I've seen productions of this in small houses and where the intimacy does come through them. And it's a show that can lend itself to warmth and fun and intimacy. And it just sounds like they missed the boat. So
yeah,
if you were thinking about that, know that going into the show that overall not getting great reviews for today. Real quick, talk to me about some of the openings that we've got coming up in February. I'm kind of looking forward to this Donna Summer musical that's coming to the Nederlander Theater.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Summer, the Donna Summer musical. It's... You know, it takes this kind of the same tack as the Cher show, which had its pre-Broadway production here, in that it uses three actresses to portray its title character at different stages in her career. I'm looking forward to that one as well. I would also say one of the big openings this month is Bug at Steppenwolf. Mm-hmm. That's an early Tracy Letts play that in this new production directed by David Cromer, our homegrown Tony winner director, is starring Carrie Coon, who is Tracy Letts' wife, but you may also know from The Leftovers or Fargo. That's kind of an intimate thriller paranoia story. I interviewed Tracy and Carrie for Chicago Magazine this month, actually, about the show, and Tracy talked about the fact that he doesn't think that this play of his has been seen in a theater the size of Steppenwolf before. It's played here at a Red Orchid. It premiered in London, but it's going to be fascinating to see. I'm seeing it tomorrow night. How that translates to a bigger auditorium.
Yeah. So there's Emma that's at Chicago Shakespeare Theater. The Windy City Playhouse, which has been doing great productions, is doing The Boys in the Band. Earlier this morning, we were talking about The Secret of My Success at the Paramount. Mm-hmm. Sheer Madness is back in Chicago. I honestly never knew that it closed. It just seems like one of these shows that's been open for the past 40 years in Chicago.
It played for years and years and years at the Blackstone.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
It is coming back in a new production at the Mercury Theater on Southport. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be great. And Chicago Theater Week has got all kinds of great things. If you go to, it's the League of Chicago Theaters that puts that on. If you go to chicagoplays.com, you can get information about that and special deals and things that they all have coming up. People want to take a look at what's going on with Chris Beyer. What's the best way to do all that?
You can go to storefrontrebellion.com, or you can go to my website, chrisveyer.com. We'll take you there as well. I'm Chris Beyer on Twitter, as you said.
Always entertaining. KRISVIRE .com. Thank you for coming in, Chris. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And let's check news right. Let's check it right now, as a matter of fact. Well, you were asking, I guess nobody asked, but we were talking about there are other things going on in Woodstock this morning besides, what was the Groundhog Willie up in Woodstock this morning that was yanked out of his perfectly comfortable surroundings and did see his shadow this morning, but they have all kinds of festivities that are going on up in beautiful Woodstock all morning long. And Rick Belairs has been a great spokesperson for the festivities. Is Rick there? Do we have Rick ready to go? Okay, here he goes. Yeah, Rick Belairs is on the phone to join us. Hi there, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Dean. How are you?
Doing very well. Have you been up early with all the... festivities with your Groundhog Willie up there today?
Got up pretty early, and yes, Woodstock Willie. So it's a beautiful sunny day, and after a week of very gray, gloomy stuff, we should like the idea of a nice sunny day, but of course that did mean that Woodstock Willie did see a shadow, and so that means 6 more weeks of winter.
Now, earlier we had the history of how this Punxsutawney Phil thing got started. How did Woodstock become, you know, kind of, you know, the Chicago area's spot for Groundhog Day?
Well, Punxsutawney's got about 100 years on us. Our festivities started with Harold Ramis bringing Bill Murray and the movie Groundhog Day to Woodstock.
Oh, I thought it was going on before the movie. No?
No, we never had Groundhog Day. Didn't even think about it before the movie.
Oh, I thought that's why Harold Ramis came up there, is because you guys already did it. But so
they were looking for a cute town to make the movie in, and because he had family in Chicago and Bill Murray had family in Chicago, right, they wanted to work kind of close to Chicago. They decided that Punxsutawney really wasn't that photogenic, so they went scouting around and they came across Woodstock.
The very charming municipality of Woodstock, which is has been a very lovely setting. So that's since the early 80s then that this has been going on.
Well, filmed in 92. Movie came out in 93.
Oh, 93, okay.
And in 94, there was literally a handful of people. I mean, it couldn't have been 5 or 6 who thought, well, they made the movie here, we should celebrate Groundhog Day. So a handful of people did. And the next year, it was maybe 25. And it's grown to, this morning we had a couple thousand people standing in the snow in the park in the town square for our festivities with live groundhog and all. And right now there are about 800 people watching the movie for free in the Woodstock Theater. They kept overflowing from one screen to the next. I know you were out at the Woodstock Theater a couple of years ago. They have 8 auditoriums in the theater,
right,
and it's showing on all of them today. There's 800 people there watching Groundhog Day over and over again.
Wow. It makes sense that you would do it over and over again. That's the legacy of the movie for sure. And nice that the theater commemorated Harold Ramis and, you know, all that his contribution to getting all of this started up there. That's really nice. But
we have Bob Hudgens in town. He was the locations manager for Columbia Pictures and helped Harold Ramis find Woodstock. He's in town, and after the movie showing this morning at noon, he's going to be leading a walking tour around town to some of the film sites. And then for any of your listeners who still want to get out and do something this afternoon, Bob will be on stage in the Woodstock Opera House with a couple of guests, telling behind-the-scenes stories of the making of Groundhog Day.
Yeah, let me take a quick break here, Rick, and when we come back, I want you to tell me about other things that are going on around town today in Woodstock, because it's a super busy day there today, and everyone has been talking about this new Bill Murray commercial that was filmed there. I want to talk about that when we come back as well. Rick Belairs is on the line with us here from Woodstock, Illinois, 1119 on WGN. So how many of you remember this?
It's Groundhog Day!
Groundhog time.
1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat.
Weatherman Phil Connors is spending the day in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
Phil! Ned Ryerson, I did the whistling belly button trick at the high school talent show.
Bing!
Bing!
But Phil's about to find out he's not just stuck in Punxsutawney.
Will you be checking out today, Mr. Connors?
Chance of departure today, 100%.
He's stuck.
It's Groundhog Day!
1993, the movie Groundhog Day, starring Bill Murray, directed by Harold Ramis. Not in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, as they depict in the film, but actually in beautiful Woodstock, Illinois. Our pal Rick Belairs from Woodstock is on the phone line with us. Do you remember, Rick, when they were actually making this movie and what it was like in Woodstock when this was happening?
I was one of the extras in the movie. When they came to town, they needed people for background scenes, for the crowd scenes, and so they put out a casting call and wanted locals to be in the movie. I mean, there's only a handful of real actors that you see in the movie. Most of the people you see in the crowd scenes, at the dinner dance, at the Tip Top Cafe, all those scenes are local residents. And it was a hoot, because even if you weren't working on it, people would gather on street corners and watch the filming across the street for different scenes. It was fun.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And then they brought back some of the magic, I guess, what, the week a week ago, where they were back filming the commercial for Jeep.
Last Saturday, it was like deja vu. Bill Murray, his brother Brian Doyle Murray, who played the mayor, and Stephen Tobolowsky, the annoying insurance agent Ned Ryerson, were all back, and it was just like it was in the movie. There's cameras and crews, and they're blocking off streets and doing these scenes, and the scene where Ned Ryerson comes across and attacks Bill, or where Bill goes and grabs the groundhog and is trying to steal it away. These scenes were recreated last Saturday for a quick turnaround for a commercial that airs today during the Super Bowl. So, if, you know, even if you don't like football, you got. So tomorrow, when you're talking about best commercials, hands down, it's Groundhog Day in Woodstock.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of the commercials were released early. A lot of the advertising agencies do that now. They release them a couple of weeks in advance, and they get even more publicity for these commercials. They hadn't done that for the Jeep commercial with Bill Murray, but it is now on YouTube. So if anyone's interested in taking a look at it, I have a still picture of it here, but I haven't actually taken a look at it and listened to the whole thing yet. So if anybody's interested, but, you know, a lot of people say, I don't want to see the commercials ahead of time. I want to, you know, see them during the game. So, you know, that'll be fun to take a look at. So what else? Give us the tourism's guide to Woodstock and what's going on there today.
So it's the festivities are wrapping up today. We've been going on for 4 days. We had the annual dinner dance at the Woodstock Moose. That's where they filmed the bachelor auction and dance scene. And we had a chili cook-off. So we've had lots of events going on for several days leading up to it. And as we said, the free showing of the movie Groundhog Day both Saturday and Sunday at Classic Cinemas. So today's last event will be, as I mentioned, Bob Hudgens, who was the locations manager for Columbia Pictures and brought Harold Ramis to town. He had worked in Woodstock on planes, trains, and automobiles ever so briefly, so he was familiar with Woodstock. And when he set out to find a town for Harold, Woodstock came to mind. So Bob Hudgens will be on stage in the Woodstock Opera House this afternoon. He also has with him Rick Lefevre, who is a local. He lives out here between Woodstock and Marengo, but he's a stuntman, and he's worked on Chicago Fire and Chicago PD and all these things. And back in Groundhog Day, he's the guy, not Bill Murray, who does the free fall jump from the bell tower of the Woodstock Opera House. He's the guy who drove the truck off into the quarry when he crashes trying to end Groundhog Day. So Rick Lefevre, the local stuntman and the guy who worked on Groundhog Day, will be there sharing the stage with Bob and telling some of the stories about the making of the movie, which has just grown and grown in popularity over the years. Back in 92 when they were filming it, nobody had any idea it would have the lasting, the legs that it's had.
Yeah, that's truly become one of the most classic motion pictures of all time. Good deal. Well, Rick, I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you for the update on everything that's going on there. People want to get more information about things going on in Woodstock. Yeah, maybe think about doing something next year. What's the best way to do all that?
Well, our website is woodstockgroundhog.org. But for all things other seasons in Woodstock, it's Real Woodstock. And there's, you know, always something going on here. It's a fun town. We're 60 miles northwest of Chicago, quaint little town square with a lot of activities.
Good deal.
And, you know, thank you for your time. Happy Groundhog Day.
Happy Groundhog Day to you, too. Give our best to Groundhog Willie.
Thanks.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate that. We'll take a quick break. We're going to talk a little weekend box office with the movies and go back for some of my interviews with some of the Academy Award winning, Academy nominated and Academy Award winning nominees, all coming up next on WGN. Partly cloudy today, possible record breaking high of 52 degrees for tonight. Cloudy skies and low 32, cloudy 40 for tomorrow. Slight chances of precipitation as the week goes on. It is 45 degrees officially in Chicago. Now, this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. 1 week from today, we're going to be talking about the Oscars. A week from today, the Academy Awards will take place, and we'll be talking predictions. We'll be talking about all of the nominees, one of the biggest days in entertainment of the year. That will all be coming then. So what I wanted to do between now and then was get through some of our interviews that we've had with some of the Academy Award nominated actors and actresses and movie makers today. And I wanted to start off with one of my favorite actresses of all time, but one of the highlights of a movie that did not perform as well as they thought that it would overall. The Clint Eastwood directed Richard Jewell movie about the overzealous security officer at the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta, having to do with the bombing, became a suspect in the bombing. Kathy Bates played Richard Jewell's mother in the movie, and she was just fantastic. We had a great conversation with her, with Clint Eastwood himself, with John Hamm, with Sam Rockwell, who all did really good supporting performances as well. One of the things that we talked with Kathy Bates about was her survival. In fact, she was here in Chicago about a year ago, and she talked at the Lynn Sage Cancer Center's annual luncheon, all about breast cancer, being a cancer survivor herself. So let's go back for someone who was nominated for Best Supporting Actress this year and has already won an Academy Award, the great Kathy Bates. So explain why you're so passionate about this and why this is so important to you.
Well, breast cancer has touched my family in many ways. It runs through the maternal line. My beloved Aunt Lee passed away in 1968, and of course there wasn't much treatment in those days. And then in the 70s, my mother had to have a radical mastectomy, which was horrific. And then a year after I was diagnosed with ovarian back in 2003, my niece, Linda, had breast cancer. So that's why I'm very passionate about it. I got it 5 years ago. I knew for me it wasn't a question of if, it was a question of when. I knew it was going to be in my future. And now the more I've gotten involved with breast cancer and also lymphedema, I developed lymphedema in both arms, but worst in my left arm. And 10 million people in America suffer from it, and that's more than MS, ALS, muscular dystrophy, Parkinson's, and AIDS combined. Yeah. But nobody's heard of it. So that's my real passion. But when I have the opportunity to talk about breast cancer, then I'm always eager to talk about lymphedema as well.
Even though you have this family history, and you said it wasn't a matter of if, but when, how would you describe the feeling that you had when, you know, that inevitable doctor's meeting, when you get the news, and that, as it's been described to me, that anvil that falls on you as you're getting the information?
Well, oddly enough, I had been giving a speech on being a survivor of ovarian cancer for 9 years, and then literally the day after I got home, I had an MRI because I hadn't been feeling quite right, and I thought maybe the ovarian's come back. And then we had barely made it into the driveway when my oncologist, Barry, called and said, "You have breast cancer." And I paused for a minute, and then I said, "You know what? Make mine a double." Because I'd seen, you know, my family members go through it, and I just decided, why risk it? And I'm really glad I did.
Talk to me a little bit about how you would counsel people who are, you know, think they might be at risk. They go to the doctor, they learn the news. What kind of words might you have for them to make it easier? Less difficult is probably more accurate.
Well, you know what? A very dear friend of mine's sister is a pediatric oncologist, Donna DiMichele, Dr. Donna DiMichele, and she's now at the NIH. And I asked her, what is the difference between how children and adults go through breast cancer, not cancer, period? And she said something very interesting to me. She said, children don't define themselves by the disease. They live their lives, they go moment to moment, and adults tend to define themselves and say, I am cancer, instead of I have cancer. And I think most specifically, people should realize that there is so much help out there now. There's so much research being done. I know for myself, I had ovarian. They had CA125, which was a tumor marker test for ovarian. Now they've got one for breast cancer, which I've availed myself of because I've only been a survivor for 5 years, and I want to keep an eye on that. So I think, and it's hard to do when you're going through the actual pain of surgery, the pain of recovery. But if you can stay off the computer at 3 o'clock in the morning and try not to keep self-diagnosing what may happen or may not happen, if you can stay in the moment, and if you can realize that, at least for me, and that's what I want to share today in the luncheon, is that in a way having cancer has been the best thing that's ever happened to me. Because I can do something valuable in the real world. You know, I've made my name pretending to be other people 90% of my time. So it's, and it's also because of my Aunt Lee, who did not have those years, and now I do have those years. And I also, when I got my star on the Walk of Fame, one of my nieces found this wonderful picture of my Aunt Lee and myself when I was 8 years old in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater. And so when we did the invitations, we put that photograph, and because my star is like 20 feet from that.
It's funny that you should say to stay off the internet. I had thyroid cancer 10 years ago, actually 10 years ago this month, now that I think of it.
Good for you.
My doctor ordered me to stop going on the internet.
Yeah.
I had watched the surgery on the internet, and I was self-diagnosing myself.
I know. It's
just as you say, it's crazy.
It's
you
really crazy. Need to, yeah. And you know what the best thing to do is that I found is that, especially if you're going through chemo or radiation or something like that, if you when you go home and you're in bed and you're lying there at night, instead of getting on the computer, if you can visualize your body and what's happening in your body. Also, my niece Linda, she knows I'm like an old hippie from way back, and she happened, the chemo that I was on was based from the yew tree, and she looked up the yew tree, and the yew tree symbolizes rebirth.
Wow.
So that really, you know, that was a great way to think about it, that you're being reborn in a different form.
Yeah. In my years of doing this breast cancer show, I guess sort of going back to your family history of how they treated cancer, I'm a little bit hopeful. I mean, it's still awful when you get the news. It's still very traumatic. But more people are winning the fight now than ever before. And there are new things all the time. So in that sense, it is hopeful, isn't it, that luncheons like this help and research that's being done now as a result of the money that's raised from a luncheon like this are all positive things, right?
Absolutely, and I don't know enough about Linsage cancer research, but my hope always is that these different disparate organizations will come together and collaborate with their research instead of, and I can't fault Linsage because I don't know if this is something that they're aware of, but so many times organizations want to be the first, you know, and they don't collaborate, they don't want to, and I feel that with cancer, the more we can collaborate and share ideas, the more important it is, the further we'll get, the quicker we'll get it, and I think this is key.
Yeah. Can I ask you a non-cancer question also? Misery's on Netflix this month.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Good. Well, they need to send me some more money.
Well, I wanted to make you aware for that reason.
Okay.
That the check should start rolling in. But what's your best memory of making that movie? It's so iconic. You realize how iconic this movie is.
I know. But my experience was very different. You know, it was the first really big movie that I had made. And the first day I went, and they had this beautiful trailer with powder blue interior, and I stayed in there about half an hour, and I thought, I'm lonely, you know. So what I did was I hung out on set every day, you know, just stayed there in between the shots. And as my friend Dustin Hoffman said, you stay plugged in. But I also got to watch the crew, and Rob Reiner had an amazing crew working with him. And I just got to see how everything worked. And that's my main memory.
Yeah. I follow your Twitter account, and you're fairly politically active, I guess.
Not enough. I'm getting more.
On there. Well, you are. I mean, you post or retweet some pretty poignant and important things. And this horrible news that we have today with the shooting in Las Vegas, I'm sure it must have touched you in some way. Did it?
I couldn't believe it when I woke up this morning, because I always turn on my iPhone and look at CNN, and I couldn't believe it. And so much emphasis is being put on Muslim countries coming into the United States and creating terrorist acts. And here we have someone, as far as my knowledge, that he's an American citizen. And someone was saying also earlier today they wished that he hadn't been killed so that we could try and understand. It just seems like there's this simmering rage underneath everything that's happening. And I'm very concerned about the divisiveness in this country. And I'm also, I'm very clear about Black Lives Matter and what it means, and trying to talk about the experience of Black Americans. I'm very pro the NFL kneeling. They're not against America. They're for America changing for the better. There was a man, I believe his name was Hank Newsom, you'd have to check that out, who went to an event where they allowed him to get up and speak. I think it was in Washington, the mother of all rallies. And they were expecting him to get up and be very vigilant and violent and about Black Lives Matter. And he said, when he got up there, he said, you know, we need to come together. If we really want to make America great, we need to come together.
There's Oscar winner Kathy Bates, an interview that we did with her, this was about a year or so ago, about her battle with cancer. She was speaking to the Linsage Cancer Foundation's annual luncheon, in a very interesting interview. She is nominated for an Academy Award, probably is going to lose that category to Laura Dern, who has been winning everything, every award show, for her role in the movie Marriage Story. But you never know. Kathy Bates was pretty great. We'll see how it all shakes out next Sunday. When we come back in just a couple of minutes, I wanted to replay the interview that we did with director J.J. Abrams. While he is not nominated for Best Director, his movie Star Wars is, in several of the special effects categories, one of the biggest, most popular movies of the year. So we'll get to that coming up in a couple of minutes. Tell you about the weekend box office numbers as well as we continue. It's 11:45 WGN. So the weekend box office numbers are out. And third week in a row, Bad Boys for Life takes the number one spot. Now, you know, it's great. It's an entertaining movie. It's a nice little popcorn movie. But, you know, compared to the other movies that are opening in January and February, not surprising that it's still number one, because it's mostly garbage that's opening in the theaters. The early part of the year, it's, you know, the worst time of the year for new movies, generally. Bad Boys for Life was number one. The Oscar-nominated World War I drama 1917 takes the number two spot. The Robert Downey Jr. Doolittle. The Dr. Doolittle movie, which did not get great reviews, although I did like it more than most people did, was the number three movie of the week. Jumanji, The Next Level, after that, and then The Gentlemen rounds out the top five. If you are going to go see any movies right now, I would recommend staying away from the new movies that are coming out and stay strictly with the Academy Award-nominated films, like 1917, for example, which is phenomenal. I think it possibly could win Best Picture. I think Sam Mendes is going to win Best Director. That's a movie you want to see on the big screen. You'll enjoy it on smaller venues, but that is one is best enjoyed on the big screen because of the way that Sam Mendes shot the film. I'm highly recommending the South Korean language film Parasite. It's incredibly entertaining, very thought-provoking as well. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Marriage Story, Little Women, Ford versus Ferrari. I mean, the movies that are not nominated for Best Picture this year are all pretty great. And, you know, if you wanted to go see a movie, those are the ones that I would recommend that you check out. One of the most popular of 2019 was Star Wars, the latest and final installment of the Star Wars adventure. And we were lucky enough to get out to Hollywood to talk to the entire cast of the new Star Wars movie, although we hadn't seen the movie. It's very unusual. Normally, before we do interviews with anybody, we sit down, we watch the movie, so we can kind of have a basis for some of our questions. They had such a veil of secrecy on this new Star Wars movie. They did not let us see the film, which, you know, put us at a little bit of a disadvantage. We got some really interesting information, though, from the director of the film, J.J. Abrams, who talked with us just before the film opened. Sadly, I get it, why we haven't seen the film.
Apologies for that.
A little blind, but so I can only guess that big musical version of Star Wars this time.
There are a lot of musical numbers.
Yeah.
A lot of songs.
How great would that be?
That would be fantastic, actually.
How great would that be if we all the wait all these years, it turns out.
Probably would be good, actually.
Yeah, it would be fun. What do you hope people take from this final episode in, you know, maybe one of the most storied franchises in movie history?
I guess I hope that they feel a bit of what I felt when I was 10 going to see Star Wars for the first time, which is that sense of possibility, that sense of hope, the idea that you could meet your most unlikely best friends in the most unlikely places, the idea that the average person among us could actually be an integral part of defeating some oppressive, monstrous, enormous, you know, force. The idea of faith, the idea of loyalty. I hope it's a thrill ride for people. I hope people scream and cheer and cry. I think it's a very moving story, and hopefully they'll leave the theater feeling better than when I got there.
Yeah, are we going to have, you know?
That was a great answer, by the way. I can't even know what that was. Holy crap! I'm exhausted.
Fantastic. I would expect nothing less from you, really. It's like, wow, JJ sucked today.
Oh my
today,
god! I need
answers.
A nap.
Yeah, sorry. Big movies like this, and effects-driven movies especially, have gotten kind of a bad rap lately. That they're theme parks, that they're not stories. How do you feel about the big movie taking its place among great filmmaking?
I love movies. You know, I love cinema, and it's sometimes a story calls for it being a visual spectacle and not much more, I suppose. You know, sometimes it's not meant to be visually spectacular at all, but deeply emotional and deeply meaningful. And other times it's somewhere in the middle. You know, you look at what Scorsese said about the Marvel films. You know, he just made a movie that happens to use visual effects, you know, in a massive way, but does it in a very in a sort of invisible way, or is intended to be invisible way. You know, obviously, the comic book films are not meant to be, you know, without their visual effects. Like, they are comic book films, and I think that there's a gamut of types of movies. I think to say one is cinema and one is not cinema isn't quite fair. I think that cinema hopefully is big enough and broad enough that it can contain all sorts of storytelling. And I just know that in the case of this film, our goal was to tell a deeply emotional and moving story that happens to have visual spectacle, but not to make something that is all about the visual effects. The visual effects were always at every turn for us serving character and story.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Viewers have been texting in questions, and they're all about small, intimate moments that they hope are going to happen in the movie.
But that's the thing that people actually care about.
Yeah.
And they sort of know they're going to get the big chases and the big fights, but the things that people really want are like literally scenes like this with two people in a space like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's director J.J. Abrams from Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. He is not nominated, but the film is nominated this year for Best Original Score, for Best Sound Editing, and Best Visual Effects. If the movie should win any of those categories next Sunday, it'll be the first time since Return of the Jedi in 1983 that any Star Wars movie has won an Academy Award. The very first film, which is actually Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, was nominated for a number of categories. It won 6 Oscars, including some special recognition, but Return of the Jedi was the last Star Wars movie to win any kind of Academy Award acknowledgement. So we'll see what happens next Sunday. We'll have more of my conversations with the Oscar-nominated stars, the Oscar-nominated directors. Next Sunday is our Oscar Sunday show. We'll bring in some other critics and get their thoughts and ideas and opinions about what they think might happen at the Academy Awards. To me, right now, just in a nutshell, I think the battle for Best Picture right now is between 1917, the World War I drama, and Parasite, the South Korean language film that is it's a little bit difficult to describe, but definitely worth seeing. It's very thoughtful and funny and well shot and beautifully put together. So I think that, you know, they may split the highest honors. I think Sam Mendes definitely is going to win Best Director. He has been winning every award that there is when it comes to direction, including the Directors Guild of America Award, which is one of the biggest indicators of what could happen at the Academy Award, both in the category of Best Director, but generally who wins Best Director from the Directors Guild goes on to win Best Picture. So if you believe that, then 1917 could go on to victory. But Parasite has also won some of the top awards, including last night, the Writers Guild of America gave out their awards, and Parasite was a winner last night, which probably means that it's going to win the category for Best Original Screenplay when that comes out. So anyway, it's all next Sunday. The Academy Awards are next Sunday. We're going to get into our food show coming up in the next hour. We'll be joined by longtime Chicago restaurateur Jimmy Banos from Heaven on 7. They are celebrating a very significant birthday. And we'll talk about Fat Tuesday and also soup on Super Bowl Sunday next on WGN. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. A little behind the scenes, Schwani is breakdancing in the newsroom right now. I think he may have just slipped. Yeah, just I've fallen and I can't get up. I gotta think that Pitbull might be joining J-Lo. It hasn't been announced at all, but he's Mr. Miami. This is the song that he did with J-Lo a couple of years
ago. Is that 31 Flavors guy going to be on with her, too?
What's 31?
Flavo Flav or Flavors
no,
or whatever?
No, Flavo Flav is not, as far as I know, maybe he'll be in the crowd dancing. 31 Flavors. You crack me up. I love it. Jennifer
I love
Lopez.
That picture of him with the big clock around his
oh, yeah.
neck.
Yeah, that's the best. Jennifer Lopez and Shakira doing the halftime show today. Looking forward to that. Demi Lovato is singing the national anthem. That's going to be sometime between 5 and 5:30-ish. They don't know exactly, you know, if everything goes on time, the game is going to start at 5:30. Usually it runs a little bit late, but we'll look forward to all of that. Coming up, we're going to kick off the food show. And on Super Bowl Sunday, we don't really get into, like, Super Bowl recipes for Super Bowl Sunday, because it's kind of late for that. That's why we did it last week. We've done it over the past couple of weeks. Although, Schwani, let me just give you this, because you're giving me grief a minute ago when I joked that I was going to be doing Sloppy Joe's on the grill.
And then you said someone texted in or phoned in and said that there's a way to do it. Well, I want to hear this.
Someone sent a recipe, but you could easily do Sloppy Joe's on the grill. Like when you do some veggies on the grill or shrimp on the grill, or things that are smaller on the grill. You know, a lot of people have those baskets.
Those work very well.
Those are very nice. Yeah. I just hate the cleanup on those.
I know.
It's a pain in the neck to clean those. That's why I go to the grocery store, Jewel. I don't know if they have them this time of year, but in the summertime, for those of you that have stolen my shopping cart, which seems to happen every week.
You can't miss it. It's the one with the raincoat over it.
Keep everything covered because it's nobody's business what I'm buying.
But if I ever see a basket with a raincoat,
I don't like people looking at my groceries. I don't like people judging me. Oh, look, he's got four bags of Bugles. Stop judging me.
Year later, Mom, where are the Bugles? They're all out.
That mean man took all the Bugles. I don't want people judging me. But, they sell these wire mesh. It's kind of like those baskets. It's not really a basket. It's more flat that lays right on your grill. But it's like an aluminum mesh.
And it's perfect for soft fish.
It's perfect for soft fish. I think I am going to do some salmon on the grill.
You could do salmon, absolutely.
I do the salmon on there, skin side down. The skin gets stuck to the aluminum grate. You take your spatula and just lift off the nice, you know, pink flesh. And it's perfect. And you just throw the whole thing away.
Use a nonstick spray on that?
No.
Oh.
No, because I'm going to throw the thing away anyway. It doesn't make any difference.
Okay. Oh, all right. You're not going to reuse it.
No. No, that's why I'm trying. I don't want to have to wash it because I'm too lazy. I'm way too lazy. But it's like a dollar. It's you know, big deal. You do the stuff. But similarly, if you do shrimp, you know, a lot of people do little vegetables. I love Brussels sprouts on the grill. That's fantastic. I use this wire mesh thing when I do my Brussels sprouts on the grill so they don't fall through. So here's my point now with the Sloppy Joes. You could easily do Sloppy Joes on the grill. I would do the veggies first, the veggies that would go into the Sloppy Joe mix. I would put some onion. I love the onion in my Sloppy Joes. I like to put green peppers in my Sloppy Joes, cut them up small. Grill them up first so they caramelize, set them aside, and then you put your, you know, ground beef or whatever kind of ground meat that you want on this wire mesh, you know, and it browns, it caramelizes the meat. Then I would add the vegetables back into it, mix it up. Everything suddenly becomes so delicious and smoky and wonderful. That's what I would do if I was going to do the Sloppy Joes on the grill. But while we were talking about this before, somebody sent me some recipes for a Sloppy Joe grilled cheese sandwich. How about that on the grill? Sloppy Joe's, you put on the a slice of cheese on top of a mound of the Sloppy Joe's. That goes on the grill. It melts. You put it on a nice toasted bun. That sounds fantastic to me.
That's perfect for a day like today.
I may actually do Sloppy Joe's today.
Yeah.
I've got the salmon. I'm going to do the salmon on the grill, but that sounds like a delicious idea. I'm going to try to eat as many unhealthy things as possible today and see if I can break the record.
Hey, we could break a record temperature today,
babe,
too.
Hey, nice transition.
We are 2 degrees away from doing it right now.
Are we really? Mm-hmm. Well, we're definitely going to break the record then.
Yep. It's 50. The record is 51. If we hit 52 officially at O'Hare, we're done.
All right. I love that. I love that. When we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by one of our favorite Chicago restaurateurs, Mr. Jimmy Banos from Heaven on 7. They're celebrating a big anniversary. He's got all kinds of things coming up for the Mardi Gras for Fat Tuesday. All next, WGN. 1218, it's Dean Richards on WGN. Happy to welcome my old pal to the program, Chef Jimmy Banos. who you know originally from the Great Heaven on 7 restaurant on Wabash, a number of other projects along with his son as well. And he's got some special things that are coming up, both for Fat Tuesday, which is February 25th this month, but also Heaven on 7 celebrating, I cannot believe this, its 40th anniversary. Jimmy, good morning.
Good morning, Dean. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Congratulations. Happy anniversary.
I appreciate it. I can't believe it either. I was only like 10 when I opened it up, for God's sake.
Yeah, you and me both. Yeah.
Jeez. It's, you know what? I walk in that restaurant every day and I just can't, you know, I shake my head. I can't believe that as we were coming closer to 40, and it's just like, my goodness, you know, and in this day and age, it's pretty exciting to see that.
Well, for a restaurant to last that long is unprecedented, number one. It speaks to the quality of the restaurant. But take me back these 40 years when you started the restaurant, you and your family started this restaurant. It's in an office building at 111 North Wabash. It's the seventh floor of a building that is primarily doctor's offices, dentist offices. It's not a place where you would expect to find a New Orleans-style Cajun restaurant. And, you know, that's kind of where the name comes from. It's Heaven on the seventh floor of this building at 111 North Wabash.
Right. And, you know, when we first started, when we bought it, it was a Jewish delicatessen. It was a father and son-in-law that owned it. And when we started, you know, we were doing the, till we got ourselves, you know, entrenched in it, we were kind of doing the Jewish deli thing, you know. But, you know, the people that had it before, and everything was frozen, and, you know, like frozen matzo balls, frozen Kreflach,
right.
And, you know, so we started curing our own corned beef, butchering our own meat, making our own matzo balls and Kreflach and things like that. And then we just started doing, like, new American cuisine, and probably in 83-ish, 84, I got Paul Prudhomme's cookbook, and he was, of course, I know you know, was a famous chef in New Orleans.
Legendary.
K. Paul's Louisiana Kitchen. So I made a couple things from the book, and people honestly went crazy. And so I cold called them, and this is what I always tell any young kids: you want to take a chance, and if you think something, go after it. You know, call people; they will return your call after 100 times. Yeah,
but just to get you to stop.
Right. It just gets you. Yeah, you know, I did it for one. You know, he called me back the next day, and that telephone call that we had changed my life. I went down there probably about a month or so later with my wife, and that trip honestly just changed my whole life and my family's life. And I started doing New Orleans style food, and the Jewish deli stuff started shrinking, and the rest is history.
That's amazing. I never knew that whole history. That's absolutely amazing. And this was all before there really were any kind of New Orleans style or Cajun restaurants in the Chicago area. I mean, for a little while, the early days, there was nothing. And then you were really, to me, the first really big and successful one. And then they started popping up around they came and went around the Chicago area. But you're still standing. You're still going strong.
Yeah, you know, we feel good. You know, it was me and my dad in the kitchen, and my mom and my brother in the front of the house. And, you know, we worked. It was a true, true family business, you know. And then brought our kids. My brother brought his kids in, and then of course I brought mine and my two children. And Jimmy is, you know, fourth generation chef. My daughter, she helps every once in a while, but she's in the makeup industry. She's a makeup artist. And then my nephew Andrew and Alexis, they're both working for us. Alexis is working at the Heaven on 7. Andrew's working at the Purple Pig. So it's great. You know, it's a whole, we spawned a whole nother generation, you know, which is great.
Yeah, you've created an industry for your family. And, you know, it's not like you know, children or siblings that, you know, come into this kind of stuff and they don't really want to be there and the quality suffers. You know, every new restaurant, every new project that the Banos family is attached to is, you know, super, super successful. So what do you
have? I appreciate it.
Yeah. What do you plan for the anniversary? You had big doings going on over there?
Well, you know, we're starting off with, I've always wanted to open up a po' boy shop. So I said, you know what? I'm going to do a pop-up. You see all these, you know, all the young kids. Oh, we're going to do a pop-up here, pop-up there.
Right.
So I said, I'm going to do a pop-up in our own restaurant. So I've got this artist in New Orleans called Simon or Simone, and he made this beautiful a board. It's called it's Jimmy's Po' Boy Shop, and we're hanging it up in the restaurant. So you come in. I pick 10 different po' boys. I have over 20 po' boys on the menu. So what we're doing is we're making it more economical for people. So if you want to just grab and go, I mean, you come in, you order it, we get it for you, and we basically discount the price of what we're doing, just like a really true po' boy shop where you come in, you wrap it in the paper and you know, and then what do you call it? And then just hand it to the people, put it in the bag, and
right,
go.
Right.
So we're really excited about it. I mean, people, I've been kind of teasing this thing about probably about a year on Instagram, and people have just been going crazy. When are you doing it? When are you doing it? When are you doing it? You know, so, you know, it's one thing I've done is just keep on coming up with new dishes, new things, and I've got a really good team of people with me, and I mean, I've got people that have worked with me for over 20 years. One of our guys has been with me for 36 years. You know,
how about that?
And we've got some, you know, really, really good people. And then I'm going to have a party at night with family and a lot of friends and a lot of people, and so we should have some fun. And then we got Mardi Gras coming. You know, Mardi Gras is a couple weeks away, and so now we just start gearing it up. You know,
the poor boy shop is going to be February 4th. So the first one is this coming, what would it be, when? Wednesday?
Tuesday. On our anniversary, actually.
Oh, too. Perfect.
On our anniversary.
Okay, so
yeah, it's... Yeah, so it's the 4th, the 11th, and the 18th.
Okay.
And, you know, because we don't do anything normal, you know. It's like, why, when we first open for dinner, we open up on the 3rd Friday of each month. You know, people are like, what the heck's going on? You know, so we're just doing this just to test it out and get some kinks, even though... you know, we make po' boys every day, but, you know, we're doing it. We're wrapping them now different, and so it's you know, we want to make sure everything's right, and then we'll add or take away, and then probably after Mardi Gras, then we'll do it every day.
Yeah, it sounds like a fantastic idea. So that's February 4th, 11th, and 18th, and your festivities for Mardi Gras, for Fat Tuesday, actually begin on February 21st, spreading through Tuesday, the 25th, with music and food and all kinds of the kind of celebrations that you guys have become so famous for. So anyone wanting to get more info, you can go to heavenon7.com. You can check them out on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, at heavenon7. Again, happy anniversary, Jimmy. I'm so happy for you. Give my love to the whole family. It's always good to talk to you.
I really appreciate it. Hope to see you Tuesday, maybe.
All right, bud. Take care. There's Jimmy.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. When we come back from the break, Super Bowl Sunday, the tradition here is to talk soup, which is what we're going to do coming up next. WGN. Time and welcome in. It's time to eat. Food Time is Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show, the award-winning All Things Edible program, heard every Sunday at this time. And our Food Time program is sponsored by our friends at the Greek Islands Restaurant. Super Bowl Sunday is one of the biggest food days of the year. think it's right behind Thanksgiving, I believe. But I do know it's the biggest day of consumption for pizza. Not a surprise. A lot of you are going to, you know, either make your own or be ordering out for today. It's the biggest guacamole day of the year. The biggest consumption of avocado for the year as well. But, you know, everyone's got their Super Bowl favorites. So, you know, we've talked about that the last couple of weeks. So what I wanted to get into today was, and what we've done on our food show here for many years in the past, that on Super Bowl Sunday, we talk soup. It's generally pretty cold on Super Bowl Sunday, although today's a little bit of an exception. I want to find out your favorite soup recipes. If you've got something that's truly spectacular, my phone line is open. My text line is open for you, 312-981-7200. And I'm hoping that you'll check in and tell me your favorite soup recipe. Or if you have questions about preparing soups, maybe we can help you with that as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got some nice things on our WGN prize list today for anyone who calls in to contribute to the show with some soup recipes. I was in Los Angeles this past week. I was there the other day interviewing Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Let me drop a couple of names. They have a new movie that's coming out that's called Downhill. I'll tell you more about it. It opens on Valentine's Day. I'll tell you more about it then. And we had a great conversation. Will Ferrell is a longtime pal. My first time interviewing Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I can't believe that I've actually never sat down with her before and shared some time. She couldn't have been more delightful. Talked a lot about her time here in Chicago, going to Northwestern, working at comedy clubs, you know, improv groups and so forth here in the Chicago area. So we had a nice time with that. But when I was in Los Angeles, we saw the movie and got done kind of early. I'm going to have a little dinner. And so I call up for the room service and I ask what kind of soup do they have. And they had my favorite soup, which is curry butternut squash soup. It's fantastic. It's a basic butternut squash soup. They add curry to it. And it's just great. I tried to make it one time. I was not very successful. I baked the butternut squash till it was nice and soft. I pureed it. I added it some chicken broth to it. I think I messed up with the seasonings in it. It was way too curry-y. You know what I mean? Curry should be used discreetly, and I think I put way too much in. I put carrots in it. I put, you know, onions in it. And, you know, it looked great, but those spices did me in on that. So if you're going to try that, I would recommend, you know, that you, you know, be a little bit discreet. But, man, was that ever good. We've got some folks who want to share some recipes with us now, including Carol, who's calling in from Chicago. Hi, you're on WGN.
Oh, hi, Dean. I wanted to tell you about the oxtail soup my mother used to make.
Yeah, tell me about this, because I love oxtail soup. I've never made it in my life.
Okay. Well, just oxtails, really, and barley in it. But when it's done, my mother always put some tomato soup, cans of, you know, like Campbell's tomato soup in it,
yeah.
And then a little cream.
Oh,
and I
nice.
Remember that was one of my favorite when I was a child. Yeah. Did
she prepare the oxtails ahead of time? Did she roast them or
no?
Do anything? She just
pot with the water,
just put them in raw. Yeah,
yeah, and just cook it up quite a while. You know,
I guess that's part of the you know, the charm of the oxtail soup is taking the flavor from the bones of the oxtail, the bone, the cartilage, you know, all the stuff that you're not going to keep. And
I know
cooking it like crazy.
Make it without tomato soup, but I'm used to it that way. Otherwise, people make it just as a clear broth.
I'll bet that adds that a nice. I'll bet that adds a nice creaminess to it.
Yes, and then I usually put that spice marjoram across the top of it, and bay leaves and all of that in there too.
Yeah, that sounds good. You know what I saw on a cooking show? The way I think it was Cook's Country. I think that's what I was watching. They always have really like clever ideas. They made a I don't remember what kind of soup that they were making, but they wanted to thicken the soup up. And instead of putting cream or something that's highly fat into the soup, they took a can of white beans.
Oh, okay.
Put it in a blender and pureed it, and then added that into the soup, whatever it was. And that added such a rich thickness to the soup, a can of pureed. I guess you could use navy beans or white beans or cannelli beans, you know, pureed into a liquid, added into the soup, adds it's not exactly no fat, but it's a lot less fat than adding cream into it.
Cream, yeah. It's usually better with half and half than with milk.
Well, yeah, or half and half. But I just thought, well, there's a nice nice idea, something a little bit different. Hang on for a second. I'm going to get you a desktop indoor weather station from American Weather Makers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. See AmericanWeatherMakers.com. We'll get that in the mail for you if you'll just hang on for a quick second. This is what I was looking for. On a nice, today is pleasant. Normally it's very chilly on Super Bowl Sunday when we do this. And one of our favorite recipes to hear, Dave, is potato soup. How are you doing in Racine, Wisconsin today?
Most satisfactory.
Delightful.
Yes, but the soup I'm doing is, I take packaged potato soup, followed, you know, packaged directions, and I take that and I add a cup of shredded carrots, a cup and a half of shredded cabbage, you know, and then I take some of the packaged corned beef. I take 6 ounces of that with a scissors, cut it into shreds, and mix it in. It's kind of a corned beef and cabbage soup.
Oh, what a clever
idea.
Kind
of for St. Patrick's Day kind of thing.
What a clever idea. You got the potatoes, corned beef, and cabbage. That couldn't be any more St. Patrick's Day, as far as
I'm
concerned.
And the other thing, though, with a soup that was kind of funny was from when on a cooking show, I think it was, I forgot which one it was, but the host said, I'm going to make old-fashioned pea soup. And then she says, first I take a leak. My inner 12-year-old kicked in, and I just don't remember what happened after that.
I love that. I love that. That's the first thing I thought of when you said it, too. My inner 12-year-old kicked in as well.
Yeah, so.
That's hilariously funny. Now, when you say that you use a potato soup mix, is that a dry mix that you're using?
A dry mix. Follow package directions at Bear Creek, or Idahoan, or, you know.
Yeah.
I've done this a few times, but like I say, just follow package directions and then add the others, kind of an add-in, and just stir it in and let it simmer and, you know, the flavors mingle. It's better the second day, like any kind of soup.
Sure, yeah, the flavors have time to get to know each other a little bit. But, I guess you could do that by boiling some nice maybe red potatoes, something like that, that, you know, normally are kind of creamy. And again, pureeing them, that creates a nice thickness with some maybe some chicken broth, and then the add-ons that you're talking about.
And like I said, I do the, you know, from the of course, the Sandra Lee kind of homemade gourmet, you know, semi-homemade gourmet kind of philosophy.
Okay. Yeah, it's you know, very convenient that way, but just as an alternative, you know, because, you know, here's the thing with soup. I love soup. Soup is one of my favorite things. But canned soup, prepared soup, packaged soup, super high in sodium, surprisingly high in sodium. That, you know, a lot of people have to watch that. So I try to keep it as natural as I possibly can. When
and another
I'm, when
thing
I'm
that also can, with for thickening agent, and this I saw from Najoa Lawson when she was making lamb shank stew, she used red lentils.
Hmm.
As a thickening agent, as opposed to flour.
And she pureed them?
No, the lentils. I think she just stirred them in, and because it was, you know, cooking down, they kind of dissolved. You know, red lentils are a little softer.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Some great suggestions there. Listen, hang on for a second because I want to send you a pair of tickets to see Noises Off. It's being hailed as the funniest farce ever at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center through March the 14th. See metropolisartscenter.com to get more info. When we come back from the break, homemade onion soup. That's another one of my favorite soups of all time. I've never made it. I want to try. So I'm hoping that when I talk to Kathy from Riverside in a minute, she can help me to make some onion soup. I've got a recipe for a cheeseburger soup. Doesn't that sound good? Cheeseburger soup. We're going to get to both of those as we continue. Soup on Super Bowl Sunday on WGN. It is 12:46. We're getting ready for Adam Hogue and Adam Johns, a Super Bowl preview starting at 1 o'clock today here on WGN. But in the meantime, our Food Time show, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show, our award-winning All Things Edible program here every Sunday, which we talk about food topics. It's become the tradition through the years that on Super Bowl Sunday, we talk soup. And we've got a bunch of people on the phone line that we'll get to in a second, 312-981-7200. A bunch of people on our text line that are offering some soup recipes. Here is one from the 773 area code. We improvised a fantastic cabbage and kielbasa soup a couple of weeks ago. That sounds delicious. Cabbage, kielbasa chunks, carrots, onion, chicken stock, salt and pepper. Simple and delicious. That does sound fantastic. Here is another, let me see here. Dean, Ina Garten's winter minestrone is great in a cold weather soup. I don't ever think I've seen her prepare that. But I've heard that it's quite delicious. Here's somebody that says oxtail soup sounds disgusting. I guess so. I guess just by label alone, I guess you might say that. Another texter says my father called oxtail soup fly swatter soup. But you know, once it cooks down, the meat that's actually in the oxtail itself is very flavorful and very delicious, and it doesn't resemble an oxtail. You don't have a tail floating around in your soup. It's just super, super rich and delicious. Also on oxtails, here somebody says braise in a Dutch oven on a bed of onion, garlic, and red wine for 3 hours, and then add to any dish, skim off the fat on top. Those sound super delicious. Here is somebody saying, Dean, given your heritage, can you give us the recipe for Greek egg lemon soup? It's called avgolemono soup. And I can give you the basics of the soup. Honestly, I've never made it myself, be perfectly honest with you. It's a little tricky to make it. I leave it to the elders in the family who know how to do it. My mom doesn't really cook very much anymore at 97 years old. But back in the day, she made a delicious egg lemon soup. Which is, you know, you either start with chicken broth or, you know, back in the day, they would actually make their own chicken broth from actual real chickens and use the pieces of chicken. But the bones from the chicken, you know, make it so flavorful. To that, they would add rice or orzo. I think the consistency of rice is a little better. The orzo can get a little bit mushy in it sometimes. But the tricky part comes is that as the rice is cooking, you beat eggs and lemon together, and then you slowly mix the hot broth in with the egg and lemon mixture. If you add it too quickly, the egg-lemon mixture can curdle, can become like scrambled eggs, and that's not what you want. It's a little tricky. It takes some timing. It takes some practice. So, I mean, that's the basics of it, but, that one is not an easy, soup to make. Kathy from Riverside, I'm hoping that your onion soup recipe is, an easy one to make.
You know, it really is, except that, I always make my own beef stock or chicken stock, and I call it my liquid gold, and it's in the freezer at all times.
Good.
So if I have a day where I know I'm going to be at home doing stuff, I get myself some bones, carrots, celery, onion, put it in a pot with water, and simmer it all day. Yeah. And then I strain it, and I have these jars that I put it in, and then cool it, put it in the freezer, and it's there when I feel like making soup. Mm-hmm. I do the same with the chicken, and you add a little thyme and bay leaf, and it smells so good while you're doing it. You know, it's worth it just for that, for me.
And so much healthier, by the way. So much healthier.
The neat thing is, when it does freeze, you can take the fat hardens, and you just take it off, and you've got this fresh broth, and it's just, I just love working with it. I feel like I've done something really good.
Right, and you can control the amount of...
I never add salt to it, so...
Right. You know. Well, I mean, even if you add a little bit, it's 100 times better than even the low-sodium broths that you can buy at the store. Even those are high. They're lower than regular, but they're still high.
So having said that, I always use my homemade stock for this onion soup, but you can use the other stuff if you must.
Okay.
But anyway, I have leftover kind of stock gravy from the Julia Child roast that my husband makes for Christmas every year. And so at this particular time of the year, I like to use it. And we've frozen the leftover stuff, and then I might add another thing of beef stock that I have. But because it was made with a whole bottle of red wine, like Julia liked to do, I add red wine to this onion soup. Ordinarily, if I was using chicken stock for it, I would use white wine. But anyway, so I use that stock. But before that, you caramelize thinly sliced Vidalia onions, and you real thinly sliced, and you separate them up, and you fry them in butter. And that's where you get the fat from for your soup. And then...
And flavor.
Oh, yeah. And then you stir them, and gradually, as they start getting brown, you add a teaspoon or two of sugar. And then... But you have to keep stirring it because you don't want them to burn. You just want them to caramelize. And then when they are caramelized, you add a tablespoon of flour to that mixture. Then you put this stock on top of it, and you know, you just keep stirring and until it boils, and then you simmer it for a little longer. Then, well, I'm adding thyme and a bay leaf to that, and another cup of red wine to the whole thing.
To the soup, and so, the soup, or for you?
Well, you know what? I don't want to leave a bottle empty.
Right, one for me, one for the pot.
Right. Right. So anyway, and then, oh, you've added also a clove of garlic, if you wish, to the onion.
Okay.
And then, so you're simmering that, and then you put it in your bowl, and I meanwhile have prepared some sourdough slices of bread. And what I like to do is rub garlic on them.
Great.
And then toast them in the oven for like 10 minutes, and then I put a mixture of grated Swiss and Gruyere cheese on top of that. And you can make those ahead of time if you don't want to use it if you don't want to do the broiler thing. But you can put that same thing on top and stick your whole bowl in the broiler if you have a bowl that can take it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's my onion soup. And this is my special Super Bowl one because it has the stock from the gravy from Christmas. So
that's fantastic. My mouth is watering right now like crazy.
Delicious in the kitchen. I mean, you know, you just can't wait to eat.
And I love that you're using natural ingredients, high quality ingredients.
Oh,
it makes such
really
a big
simple.
Difference. Yeah.
It's really a simple soup. Really, the onions, you know, the only thing that takes a little watching is the onions. But once they're done, you know, you just simmer that, and it is just delicious.
Yeah,
so,
well, that's what makes the difference. I mean, caramelizing them properly is what makes a world of difference with that. That is fantastic. I love that.
So I can't wait to eat.
hang on. I can't wait to get some now myself. I want to send you a pair of tickets to Noises Off at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center now through March the 14th. I appreciate your call. Hang on for just a quick second. I want to get to Lisa. Where are you in Brookfield, Lisa?
Yes, actually, I was on my way to go get an immersion blender so I could make this soup, actually.
Oh, great. Okay. It's a roasted cauliflower soup?
Yes, it's roasted red bell pepper and cauliflower soup. And I started this because I'm on a diet that I'm kind of reducing my meat.
Yep.
And this is really delicious, and it can be used for the broth. You can either use vegetable stock or you can use chicken broth or whatever your choice is. But what you do is you take a head of cauliflower, you cut it up into like sections for the full rice. You don't need to make them really tiny. Just put them, then you put them on a spread them on a cookie sheet.
Yeah.
And then you take two bell peppers, whatever color you like, slice them up without the seeds, of course. And then you cut them into like I'd say each bell pepper would make about 8 squares. Throw them on the sheet with the cauliflower. Then you take olive oil. I use about a tablespoon of olive oil, but you can use more. I mean, it's like, what the heck. And you toss the whole thing with the olive oil. Then I take powdered garlic and powdered onion, and I sprinkle that over that about a teaspoon of each, along with salt and pepper. And then you throw that in the oven under 400 degrees on the for about 20 minutes. Take it out, flip it. Put it back in for another 15, and then once you're done with it, the stuff should be kind of browned a little bit and nice and soft. You throw it in a stock pan with all the stuff, and then I add a box of what I use is the chicken broth, pre-made. I don't make my own. I'm not as fancy as the other lady. I don't have time for broth. But I take and I'll throw that in with all the vegetables and let that come to a boil to reduce it.
Let it cook for a while, and then you use that immersion blender to mix it all up. I don't mean to rush you along here, but we're coming to the end of the show.
Okay.
That sounds fantastic. No, it sounds so delicious.
It's gluten-free. It's wonderful.
Yeah, sounds great. Hang on for a second, because I want to get you one of those desktop indoor weather stations from American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. Thank you for the call on that. Quick break. We'll wrap things up and get set for some Super Bowl preview.